It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running for this, the 15th day of August, 2019. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. And this program, like every other, begins with gratitude, because this program exists only because of the consistent dedication of the community to keep it on the air. And so with that, thanks go out to Darlene in Connecticut and Robert in California. Thank you very kindly. If you're thinking about becoming a subscriber to The Horn, this would be a good day because, well, on both the 14th and the 15th of the month, we have only 2 subscribers. So it would be, on this particular day, Darlene and Robert would be tickled pink. And more, they'd be tickled pink to have some company. And moreover, I should add that in the last couple of days, we've lost, for various reasons, 2 subscribers. So we're net down 2 for the month. Okay? Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Did I do that? I'm not sure. You know, I get lost sometimes. And if you would like to become a subscriber and be part of the merry little band that knocks out about, a quarter of the month's funding here at The Horn, then run over to HeadOn.live, click on the contribute button, and there you'll find the PayPal interface, and then there's an option for you to make the say, $10, because $10 is easy to cipher. And we know that $10 is equal to less than half of a McDonald's hamburger, which isn't particularly good for you in the first place, whereas this program feeds your mind. That's what a $10 a month subscription runs to. So that would be what? 10 hamburgers a month. A McDonald's hamburger every 2 days. And there's nobody who needs that. That's just self-abuse. So that's how we do the subscription thing. As far as a number is concerned, we're down $400. Yesterday was a goose egg, and hopefully tonight, this evening, this afternoon, when this program is live, won't be a goose egg as well. Yes, I realize that. Anatole pointing out in the chat room that might be 10 McDonald's hamburgers, but we don't know how many hamburgers it is. And if you'd like to participate in the wacky, mad, madcap, zany, wacky, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room, pop by there. Pop by HeadOn.live, click on chat room, jump right in with a screen name and a password, and Well, you'll be joining and greeted by Anatole and Jimmy and Otto DeShot and Squeaky, all early arrivals to the conversation, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate indefatigable chat room moderator Sparky, who, in the blazing heat of Northern California in the middle of the month of August, has, although he is a third stage guild navigator, chosen not to fold space into the center of the sun. Yes. So this is where we find ourselves this evening, $400 down, and maybe more. I'll have to report on that hopefully by tomorrow. And it's too much to go into. When I explain it, I'll explain it. But maybe more. So hopefully, like I said, we'll not end the evening on a goose egg, because this is the most brutal month that this little operation has faced in a long, long, long time. Where to begin? Catching up with last night, I had a note from Clarence in Philly. Yes. And I've got a conversation planned for the beginning of the program. And we'll get to that momentarily. Okay. Okay. I'm gonna go. I had a nice fact-based note from Clarence about what happened in Philly yesterday evening. Please don't let me forget to share that with you. But I wanted, usually the first hour of the program's the filibobster these days. But I wanted to take a little bit of time and share the filibobster with our dear friend Sister Carol Baker, because Carol put me onto an article the other day that, well, it made the little hairs stand up on the back of my neck. It comes from Jacobin Magazine. It's by Michael Phillips and Betsy Frioff. And let me say this before the conversation gets started. We are, like I said, $400 behind. Darlene in Connecticut has kindly volunteered a $100 challenge this evening. So that's, and if that's met, she's going to kick in an extra 50. So that's a chance to knock down $250 of the fundraising goal tonight, which would be a tremendous help, especially, like I said, given the way the month of August is run. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you very kindly. And again, the PayPal button's over at headon.live. Michael Phillips and Betsy Frioff wrote an article at Jacobin called "The World That Made the El Paso Mass Shooter." And I read it, and it did. It made the little hair stand up on the back of my neck. And Carol put me on to the story, and we were chatting about it a little bit last night, and I invited her to pop by because she's leading a very, very busy life these days. And this the time that the program's on is about sort of at ish the end of her day, and so I really appreciate her coming on by to hang out with the gang for a little bit. Hey, Carol, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me, Bob?
I got you.
Awesome. This is a new setup for me in the new house, so I didn't know if it worked.
No, it works wonderfully. What's amazing to me is, and we can gossip a little bit for a couple of minutes before we jump
sure.
jump into the heart of the matter.
Sure.
You're a new mom.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting to turn 60 years old and have somebody say it's a boy. But it is. My life is not the same one that it was when we first became friends and started this little journey.
No,
yeah, I now live in Kansas City, and I am now in the custody of my great nephew, my sister Barbie's grandson.
You're in his custody as opposed to, yes.
That's probably a lot closer to the truth. And his adoption will be final on November 22nd.
That's amazing.
Yes, it is.
And
he's 12 years old.
And there are a series of events that led to this becoming a reality. But he's thriving, is he not? If I read all the signs aright.
He's doing extraordinarily well for a guy that had knocked around the foster care system for 2 years as I fought and fought to get him, and they wouldn't let me have him because I refused to quit my job and move to Iowa. A series of events took place where they just called me one day and said, "You got 24 hours to get here and come get him." I said, "I'll be there in 12. And I was. And he didn't know he was coming, and I didn't know he was coming, and everything happened very quickly. And a lot of changes have been made. His world is a lot bigger than it used to be.
I can imagine. Iowa to Kansas City is quite a change.
It is.
Is it true, Carol, that he refers to you as Auntie M?
Yes, I'm Auntie M. His mother could never remember my name, and she always had it in her head that I lived in Kansas. So so she called me Auntie M for her whole life, and as she had her children all called me Auntie M.
There are so many levels of irony in that that it's almost impossible to begin to approach them.
But, yes, that's true.
But I find that ironic in the extreme. Well, I hope he's I'm glad he's thriving. I hope he's enjoying Kansas City. There's a lot more, well, culture out your way.
Well, yes, great friends. He's got memberships to all the zoos and all the museums, and he's got his own library card now. He just started a very nice school. He was accepted into a very nice preparatory academy here, and he doesn't mind wearing a uniform. He's actually really enjoying himself.
That's beautiful.
He went from failing school in Iowa to leaving sixth grade here with all straight A's and one B on his final report card.
So he's starting seventh grade?
He is just starting seventh grade.
That's exactly where my granddaughter is, just starting seventh grade. And it's a very special time of life, isn't it?
It is, and he's a very kind child. He has a good heart. He just doesn't have any malice in him for all the things that he's been through. He's not angry at anybody, and but he's got a mouthful of sass because look who's raising him.
Auntie M, how could that be?
I'm totally confused by the whole affair.
Not the sister of sweetness and light. Perish the thought. Well, I do have one question. I realize you're not in the same location anymore, but is he old enough to realize the magnificence of the fact that he lives not too awfully far from the Ballerina Swan Lake Country Club and Trailer Park?
Believe it or not, his world hasn't expanded that far yet.
Oh, I live for the day when he sees the sign.
But we're not done. We're actually, and not this weekend, but next weekend, we're going to go visit a friend back out Ballerina Swan Lake mobile home and trailer park land. And I'm going to tell him the whole story, and I want to take his picture standing at the base of that sign.
Oh, that's a must. It's absolutely a must. And do remember to tell him that the world ends over Odessa, Missouri.
Oh, trust me. I'll show him the place. Because I've still got the pictures.
Well, I'm glad things are going so well, and things are happy and swimming along at work as well. You work with some mighty fine people.
I do work with some mighty fine people. Immigrants all, Mexicans.
You mean the kind of people that Ken the Cooch Cuccinelli says aren't supposed to come here?
Pretty much, but they got here before he hung the whites only sign around the neck of the Statue of Liberty.
Wait a minute. Okay, yeah, that gets a cowbell, the whites only sign.
You missed me, didn't you?
I've missed you horribly. And I really do appreciate you sending me Michael Phillips and Betsy Frios' article from Jacobin.
Because, you know, Dr. Phillips is a friend of the show, and he's done it before. And, you know, I'm not sure exactly what's going on, because I did ask him if he wanted to stand in my stead here and speak for himself. And all he said was, I can't comment any further, which tells me that something's going on. After he wrote it, he's getting pressure from somewhere. So I'm just going to leave it at that and not bother him about it. But I believe that he trusts me to interpret his writing.
As well he should. And, of course, the one thing, just to give people a little memory tickler, we talked with Dr. Phillips over a year ago, maybe two, and it was back during the faux controversy because, you know, removing statues of traitors to the United States should not be controversial, but, well, we have maggots, and we have right-wingers and teabaggers and whatnot. And so he spearheaded a charge to get a Confederate statue taken down in the greater Dallas area and was successful. And so that's what our conversation was about back then. And I love Dr. Phillips' term for these Confederate statues. It's one, yes, I'm going to hang on to. Civil War participation trophies.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, you didn't win, but thanks. You know, thanks for playing. It's the marble equivalent of a year's supply of Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat.
And there you have it.
For racist rednecks.
That's right. Yeah.
So let's talk about this a little bit. Dr. Phillips is uniquely placed, uniquely qualified to talk about how a homicidal maniac comes up out of what would seem to be just a little middle-class suburb of Dallas. And that's basically the gist of this article, is it not?
It is, and he used a word that I appreciated. It was an extreme but predictable expression of homegrown mainstream Texas nativism, because no one teaches nativism like they do in Texas, where they rewrite the history books for the school children, and that it wasn't the Civil War, it was the War of Northern Aggression.
The recent unpleasantness.
Yes. Yeah. So what he really talks about in very tight historical terms is the history of how white people have maintained their power hold over a lot of the areas that are in Texas, because the one thing that white politicians have been able to peddle so successfully is fear. They have managed to peddle fear to the white people that if they do not discriminate against these people and hold them down in their place, that they're going to be treated exactly the way they have treated Mexicans and black people and Aboriginal Americans, women, slaves. So it pretty much kind of outlines, and as I said, in a very tight historical context, exactly how this guy was essentially groomed from birth to become what he is.
And
so, yes, he's extreme, but yes, this was entirely predictable.
If you bathe a child in filth every day of its life,
sure,
don't be surprised when the child grows up filthy.
Or a mass murderer.
Right. And so Dr. Phillips makes reference to the response by Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, who he points out for us in his previous life before becoming Lieutenant Governor of Texas was the just another garden variety
white wing radio host.
Bingo. It turns out those people aren't very good at politics. We have a vice president who's one of those.
They're not very good at humanity.
No. And so in the immediate aftermath of the shooting in El Paso, Lieutenant Governor Patrick did the predictable and ran immediately to declare that Patrick Cruzius deliberately targeted and then murdered Mexican people because of violent video games.
Right. Because no other country has video games.
Yeah, and no other generation has ever played them.
Correct.
The poll quote is, "We've always had guns, always had evil, but I see a video game industry that teaches young people to kill." He said that, of course, on Fox and Fiends, over there on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so transparently wicked, because it's a shameless knee padding and fluffing of the NRA to look at a situation like that and not say a goddamn thing about the gun.
Well, isn't that their job? Isn't that the job of the entire GOP to be an NRA fluffer?
You know, that makes me think back to that photograph of Wayne the Peters, intern a couple of summers ago, you know, bobbing around in that pool in the greater D.C. area on the giant blow-up flamingo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's probably not very nice of me. But what is it in this Texan culture, which, of course, Texas originally being a part of Mexico and settled by Mexicans, what is it about Texan culture in the present day that nurtures and bathes and feeds and clothes and houses and makes mass murderers almost as a matter of course, or as it were, an industry?
Generational scapegoating of people who aren't white.
It's just that simple.
It really is. It really is. All you have to do is look at the history of Texas, which no one knows better than Dr. Phillips, and you look at how Texas gun laws have become more and more lax, and you see a state that ranks like seventh in gun violence, violent crimes, 434.4 violent crimes for every 100,000 persons. Oh, 17th highest in the country and outranked only by states with similar gun laws. And their gun laws are about to become even more lax because the AK-47 style weapon Crucius used to murder all those people is legal in that state. And their gun laws will become even looser on September 1, when gun owners will then be able to carry concealed weapons into churches, synagogues, other houses of worship, and you don't even have to have a license for up to 48 hours anywhere in the state under any mandatory evacuation order following a natural disaster. Like they don't have plenty of those.
Right. And see, when I read that part, Carol, the first thing I thought of was, okay, there's a hurricane bearing down on the Texas Gulf Coast, as is known to happen from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
And the bug out order has been given. And instead of saying, hey, wait a minute, let's get the dog and the cat, what about Fluffy, that there's a significant portion of the population of Texas that says, fuck the dog and cat, let me get my gun.
That's right.
Because I'm going to get to concealed carry for free for 48 whole hours.
And kill with impunity.
And we know, of course, who is in league with hurricanes, don't we?
Absolutely.
Because I mean, didn't one of those hurricanes have one of those, you know, Hispanic names?
Maria. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm being a little bit of a smartass. I realize it, but that's what you and I do. So, what is it? You know, you use the word scapegoating. What is it they're scapegoating for? Is it the fact that Texas is a toxic cesspit of filth in the ground and filth in the air and filth in the water? Is it the fact that Texas, is it Mexico's fault that Texas has the highest number of uninsured people in the country? Because I'm pretty sure that both of those data points that I just mentioned are exclusively the province of white Republican, mostly men, aren't they?
Well, they are, but they, you know, the fearmongers conveniently leave that part out. And they will always swing it back around. And I mean, they go back more than a century. They go back to the Mexican Revolution when, you know, there were white cotton growers in Texas that were exploiting Mexican sharecroppers as a labor force. And most of the Latino community, which was mostly, of course, born in Mexico, really only accounted for 12% of the state's total population in 1930, but 92% in the Rio Grande Valley. And there were a group of what they called sediciosos in Texas that wanted to reclaim the state from Anglo-imperialism in the 30s and 40s and started raiding Anglo farms and killed a couple of dozen farmers. And then between 1915 and 1920, fueled by anger at the sediciosos from 80 years earlier, the Anglos launched an anti-Mexican pogrom that killed up to thousands. There's really no historical number as to prove how many people they killed. But well into the 50s, Texas school students learned about their state's past from a cartoon series called the Texas History Movies that whitewashed history. Anglo-imperialists who arrived in Texas literally weeks before the 1835 revolution and sought to overthrow Mexican sovereignty so that they could extend slavery, those Texas history movies portrayed them as Texas's defenders and called the Mexicans invaders of their own country. And so the students were informed that Mexican soldiers in the Texas Revolution were just a bunch of cowardly, lazy people subservient to tyranny and were gleeful murderers. You know, they were all banditos, which wasn't true. Those were people who had been on their own land in their own country for centuries.
Well, and in many cases had their own country yanked out from under them.
Absolutely.
And suddenly found themselves living under an American flag. I'm probably rehashing history for a lot of people, but it bears remembering that part of the genesis of all of this is the fact that the Alamo happened because a bunch of white slave plantation driving Americans were aggrieved by the fact that Mexico looked up and said slavery is intolerable and eliminated slavery in the name in the name of the Mexican people.
Yes.
Who happened to be in Texas as well. So the whole remember the Alamo thing is sort of like saying remember the Confederate flag.
Exactly. That's exactly it. But it's something that has gone on and it really kind of goes down to the educational level of how they're indoctrinating the kids. Dallas in particular had been a hotbed of that kind of sentiment. And a man named Justin Kimball, who was Dallas's school superintendent from 1914 to 1924, wrote a book in 1927 called Our City, Dallas, a community civics, that called for the clearance of African American and Latino slums in the city. So they kettle them all in to this area, you know, keep them poor, keep them unemployed or underemployed, and then blame them for where they live. And he argued that Mexicans and Mexican Americans posed a threat to white health and safety, describing Mexicans as swarming the city. The Latinos of Dallas were considered outsiders with no long-term interest in the welfare of the city, he claimed, and they represented, as he put it, a disease on the local body politic. So he said most of the Mexicans who live in Dallas are not American citizens, do not speak English, do not expect to remain in Dallas or the United States long, and are unaccustomed to our conditions of life and housing. They will accept conditions of housing to which no other people in our city or state will submit, conditions that were created by the white people, I might add. Each such congested, overcrowded, unhealthful center is like a canker or eating sore on our fair city. The rest of our city can no more live and grow and prosper in such a condition than our body can be well when it has an angry, bleeding, inflamed sore on some part of it. Is any of this ringing, like, familiar?
You just reminded me of something I heard years ago when we were in Vegas one time. And I had, and you know, white people will make assumptions about you because you share a, you know, pinkishness. And I remember a fella in Vegas looking at me and saying, well, see how it is out here in the West. Y'all in the South, you've got, and there's that word that's got all the same letters as ginger. Y'all got, well, out here in the West, we got Mexicans. And I couldn't believe what I was hearing. And I said, that's disgusting. That's racist, xenophobic, whatever.
Yeah.
And he said, well, that's just the way it is. And let me guess, there's probably a statue of that guy who said those words you shared a minute ago. There's probably a statue or two of him in Dallas.
It's somewhere.
But, I mean, this is a historical milieu that should not be, it should not be surprising to people. But then again, we live within our generational bubble, and it may be that what Dr. Phillips and his wife wrote at Jacobin is brand new and shocking and horrifying to discover. But, you know, in November 1963, Carol, when John Kennedy was headed to Dallas, there were a number of people who said, don't go there, Jack. Those people are crazy.
Yes.
I mean, yes. Dallas, Birmingham, Little Rock, Jackson, Mississippi. Really, how much of a difference is there? And racism is racism is racism is racism, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Although it used to be a lot more coded than it is now. Now it's just as open and blatant as it was when I was a child.
What we thought had gone away hadn't.
Had been bubbling beneath the surface and was just waiting for all of the cosmic tumblers to fall into place, so that they could come rushing back out to pollute this country in uglier ways than ever. Because now they have the internet. Now they have 8chan and 4chan and all of their little underground places in order to plot and plan these things. But again, Dr. Phillips talks specifically about the Dallas-Fort Worth area and how 25 years after Brown the Board of Education, eventually the boom in population in there came along. You know, the desegregation, Dallas school desegregation case went on for 4 decades in the federal courts. And it was only after an uprising in downtown Dallas in 73 following the police murder of a 12-year-old Latino boy who was falsely accused of breaking into a gas station White residents sought refuge in neighboring cities like Allen, Plano, Garland, and Richardson, Arlington, and Irving. So about 100,000 Dallas residents fled the city in a matter of like 12 years. 100,000, which made the inner core of the city browner and blacker. And what those white people took with them to the suburbs was their money and their conservatism. And all of the fear of the other.
Can we just dispense with one thing, Carol?
Sure.
You said they took their money and their conservatism. When we say conservatism, that's a placeholder for their racism and their bigotry.
Now more than ever.
Because it occurs to me that the Republican Party, and I remarked on this a couple of nights ago, because this is the 39th anniversary of Ronald Wilson Reagan, old 666 himself, standing at the fairgrounds of Neshoba County, Mississippi, near Philadelphia, Mississippi, and essentially looking the Klan in the eye and saying, "Well, I'm your boy."
Yeah,
and so
more than a wink and a nod.
It was, and it was more than a dog whistle. It was a goddamn foghorn that was heard all over the country.
That's right.
And the so-called decent Republicans, that's not what he meant. No, we're not racist. We're fiscal conservatives, and he's going to make America great again.
You know, I've spoken English all my life, and I'm getting sick and tired of people thinking I need a fucking interpreter.
Right. And of course, there's that in that documentary that was available. I don't know if it still is on Netflix. Get Me Roger Stone.
Oh yeah.
There is a still photograph of Ronald Reagan standing while he's campaigning. He's standing in front of a he's standing with a Statue of Liberty in the background, and the banner in front of him, oddly enough, reads, "Make America Great Again."
Yep.
And so it really has been the Republican Party has been a platform, a launching pad for this kind of pernicious racism. By the way, I got an email asking me to repeat the name of the article. It's at Jacobin Mag, JACOBINMAG, JacobinMag.com. "The World That Made the El Paso Mass Shooter" by Michael Phillips and Betsy Frioff. And what I really appreciate about this this article is its breadth and its depth. It doesn't present things that are easily, it's not the usual internet article where the assumption is that no one reading has the capacity to read for more than 5 minutes.
You start reading it, you can't stop.
No.
Until you get to the end.
And it's, he mentions the suburbs, of Irving, Plano, Allen, Carrollton. And those are areas where, white flight took place. But, Patrick Cruzius didn't come from a rice and beans, poor white trash household.
Oh, no, no.
And so, the grievance, when you consider things like that, is entirely manufactured. There was nothing for him to be mad at, but he was, if I take the thrust of this article correctly, he was weaponized.
Sure he was.
And God knows how many tens of thousands of other kids in Texas have been similarly weaponized. And there are weaponized adults walking around. And without diminishing anything, because that is certainly not my goal, it's a wonder that there isn't an El Paso every day of the week. But then again, when you look at the violent crime statistics in Texas, you could halfway argue that there is.
Well, he went on to kind of focused in on something. He said, this guy was from Allen, Texas. And he said, Allen's rich. The median income is nearly $110,000 a year, which is 75% higher than the whole Dallas-Fort Worth area. Kids grow up in that atmosphere where the accumulation of greater wealth kind of becomes an expectation, and poverty is seen as a defect. So when you add to that social Darwinism, which starkly divides the population into winners and losers, is the toxic racist rhetoric of a number of political leaders. And in Allen alone, since the 70s, corporate giants like the Dallas Cowboys, Dr. Pepper, Snapple, ExxonMobil, Frito-Lay, Nokia, Texas Instruments, Toyota, they all made the Dallas-Fort Worth suburbs their home, which drew hundreds of thousands of workers from all over the world. So now the city of Plano is nearly 20% of the nearly 20% of the population is Asian. And that includes a lot of very well-educated engineers and other professionals that come from Muslim-majority countries like Pakistan and Bangladesh. But in Crucius's home of Allen, he saw a tripling of the Latino population, a 262% jump in the Asian population, and a 524% increase in the number of African-Americans since 2000. So when you have this kind of xenophobic rhetoric coming from very powerful political leaders that, you know, there's a lot of Steve Kings down in Texas, you know, and they're sitting there telling him, you better be afraid because pretty soon you're going to be the minority. And what are they so afraid of in becoming the minority, Bob?
They're afraid that the people who become the majority will start behaving like white people. It is as though, Carol, they know nothing of the teachings of nonviolence of Dr. King, and the only thing that they can recall is that once upon a time that Malcolm X feller said something about chickens coming home to roost.
That's right. So they're not only being invaded by Mexicans and by black people. Oh, the gays. Because, you know, and Sharia law.
You know, it's funny when I don't speak Arabic. I wouldn't be surprised if you did, but I don't think you do.
No, I had an Iranian roommate in college who only taught me how to order a hooker.
To do what? Never mind. Stop. No, I'm so ashamed. But when you said Sharia, it's funny because when people like you and me say Sharia, we automatically move into ignorant redneck vocal mode and say Sharia.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard you do it. I do it. Because there's more of a cultural context with that word coming out of the mouths of ignorant American conservative right-wing Republican voting rednecks than there is in the 1,400-year-old culture that gave rise to the term.
They're still fighting to pass anti-Sharia bills all over Texas. And do you remember in 2015 when that Sudanese kid, he was a Muslim, his name was Ahmed Mohammed, built the clock?
Yeah, oh yeah.
To school. Remember that?
Yeah, and every white Texan in a 50-mile radius immediately shat themselves.
It's a bomb. No, it turned out it was a fucking clock. But the kid was arrested first. They later dropped the charges, but what does that do to him?
Well, barring the fact that he's a decent, intelligent young kid, if you were asking the terrorism experts at Homeland Security or the FBI or the CIA, wouldn't they say that that's how you turn people into terrorists?
Of course. That's how you radicalize someone into hating the people who have wronged them.
Along the same lines as spending 18 years hellfire missiling wedding parties in Afghanistan, you're eventually going to piss off somebody that wants to get revenge?
Oh, hell yeah.
Maybe somebody who saw their mama get hellfire missiled by the greatest country in the history of the world on earth now today forever into the universe under God.
Yeah. Which one?
Yeah.
There's thousands of deities. I'm sorry, I'm confused.
Well, that's why I just don't roll. I don't roll that Dungeons and Dragons die anymore, because whatever you get on the 22 sided die, you lose on the other 21.
But you know, it's this hatred of anybody who doesn't look like them. I mean, they are still terrorizing the mosques in Texas. I mean, they tried to stop them from building a Muslim cemetery because they said the bodies would contaminate the water supply. What is it in a Muslim's DNA that would contaminate the water supply?
Well, Carol, it's not really in the Muslim's DNA. It's in the white folks' DNA, because that's one of the oldest ones in the world. Because back during when the plague was sweeping across Europe, of course, the argument by white folks was the Jews are poisoning the wells. I mean, so much of this stuff is just rehash and retread. And, you know, where maybe before it was aimed at the Jews, and now it's aimed at the Muslims. Because it's all a matter of what is sociologically referred to these days as othering.
Oh, yeah. And these fine Christians threaten to go pour pig's blood all over the ground where they wanted to build the cemetery because, you know, that's what Jesus would do. It took them 5 years, but they finally got approval for the cemetery last year, just last year.
And, of course, one of our least favorite members of the Republican caucus in the House is from that the beating heart of that racist area, the first congressional district of Texas. And that would be none other than Louis Asparagus Gohmert.
Yeah.
And
Mr. Anchor Baby himself.
Right. And I remember that story that he told practically with tears running down his face about, and of course there wasn't a word of truth in it. There was no such constituent. But one of my constituents told me that he was in the grocery store buying his groceries with his hard-earned American money when this woman in front of him, and he couldn't afford a lot of food to feed his family, and he was watching this woman in front of him use her EBT card, and she had a basket full of king crab legs.
Oh, God, yes.
And I knew it was a lie because I'd heard that story so many times on White Wing Radio.
In so many different iterations.
Yeah, it's either steak or king crab legs or, oddly enough, the most valuable thing in the grocery store is fucking saffron. There's never a woman with an EBT card and a basket full of saffron or caviar. Because, see, caviar doesn't resonate with the mouth-breathing knuckle walkers that run to the polls to vote for these freaks.
Correct.
Well, let me ask you this. There is a demographic shift coming in this country.
Yes.
And it's natural. It is not manufactured.
No.
Once upon a time, say 1491, the largest, most prosperous, cleanest, healthiest city in the entire world was a place called Tenochtitlan. And you know how fascinated I am with that culture.
Yes.
And the Spanish came in, committed a genocide, tried to raise that entire city to the ground, which Cortez, interestingly, had noted was like a prettier, cleaner Venice, because it was crisscrossed by canals.
Yes.
And it shone white in the sun, and there were vividly painted buildings, and there were fluttering banners made of the tiniest feathers off of lovingly made by hand by master craftsmen that floated even when there was no breeze. And he destroyed all that. But in 1491, it was one of, if not the most populous city on the planet. And it is rapidly approaching now, and it's only taken 500 years, the most populous city on the planet again. So this is just natural cyclical process. It is not, as these white-wing racists insist, a function of some insidious plot.
Or an invasion.
You know, how can people who have been here for the last 10,000 years invade?
Well, I guess when you're white and you don't own a rear view mirror or a book or teeth
or a conscience.
Well, there's that.
And and like I said, it's all retread. One of the things that they use, that these people use in Texas, is the claim that, well, they're going to bring us diseases. And the disease argument has been used against immigrants, probably going back to the
absolutely
to the days before Julius Caesar.
Yes.
They're going to bring diseases. And yet, as I pointed out a couple of weeks ago, you know, they had such conniptions in the for-profit media when some Democratic presidential candidates raised their hands and said they would extend health care to immigrants.
Yeah.
And, okay, so you're going to be an asshole and you're going to object, you know, so much for all that teachings of Jesus stuff.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is, if somebody does come across the border and has an infectious disease, wouldn't you want to make sure that they got treated so the disease didn't spread?
Because, it makes sense.
I mean, contagion doesn't recognize the United States national boundary. So you'd better be but what we're finding out, and I hold this to be true, we've had little babies die in American custody because I submit that they came from isolated pockets and isolated communities in the highlands of Guatemala.
Absolutely.
And they came here, and just like happened 500 years ago, they got exposed to white diseases that their body had no way of fighting.
Yep.
And those babies
died. Let's face it, who brought more disease to this country than anyone? White Europeans.
Yeah. Absolutely. By the way, you got a note from Scott in San Diego, who yes. has some he has some experience of his own with Kansas City. He was radio talent out there once upon a time. He says, please tell Sister Carol that for just 64 cents a day, she can adopt me. It would be nice to see Kansas City again.
We have a guest room.
Yeah. Son of P.S. As for how the attitude and mindset of Texas got to be the way that it is, here's a hint. If you gave the average Texan an enema, you could bury him in a matchbox. This does not apply to the Texan members of the Horn Family Community Congregation. But, a lack of education combined with festering, fomented hatred, evil shit is bound to happen. And it is.
And the truth of the matter is that this kind of racist, xenophobic, cultural nativism is what creates people who go commit mass killings. And it was all right there in everything that he wrote. Could have been taken straight out of one of the Führer's Klan rallies.
Yep.
It was all there. It was all there. And then you have people like Steve Scalise standing up saying, well, Donald Trump's no more responsible for the El Paso shooting than Bernie Sanders is for mine. Well, was Bernie Sanders calling for you to leave the country and calling for people to kill you?
Right. Was Bernie Sanders decrying the Cajun invasion of Louisiana?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I missed that part. But in the end, you know, he's the truth is that this guy was a predictable product of Texas gun laws being placing weapons of mass destruction in the hands of a guy who had been overcome with the white panic that was sanctioned by the Texas establishment.
And this is an important point, Carol, because I've talked from time to time about how, you know, out there on this, and you mentioned 4chan and 8chan and that mm-hmm. website that rhymes with light and fart.
Mm-hmm.
But they're there, and they work hard to get kids while they're young.
Oh, yeah.
But in the case of Patrick Crusius, he didn't need that. All he had to do was to turn on the radio.
Yes.
Or watch local TV. Or
turn on Fox News.
Turn on Fox News, or what's even worse, pay attention to the elected representatives in the Texas government, whether it be the governor, the lieutenant governor, the attorney general, the majority Republican members of Congress, mm-hmm. the two vicious members of the United States Senate from Texas. And that's all he would have needed.
That's right.
And it's frightening because he's out there, and as I mentioned last night talking to Todd, it's like roaches. If you see one, you got 1,000.
This is true.
And the last part of this is the you know, I don't know how many opportunities there were to prevent what happened in El Paso from happening, but I know there was one. And this is also part of that Texas culture. I've mentioned previously that Patrick Crusius' mama,
mm-hmm.
who again was not living in a hovel or a shack,
that's right.
Her boy came home with his freedom protector, his semi-automatic weapon of war freedom protector, and proudly showed it to mama. And Mother Crusius picked up the phone and called the Allen Police Department and said, "Is it safe for my son to have this gun? He has no training with firearms. I don't even know if he knows how this thing works. And I just don't want him to get hurt." And because of the laws in the state of Texas, the response of the Allen, Texas Police Department was, "Ma'am, your son is free, white, and 21. He can have that gun and as many others as he can afford.
Yep.
Now, you just don't you worry your little old head." And probably still, even as we speak, the Allen, Texas Police Department is still answering questions. Because the only thing they would say is, "Well, we don't log them kind of calls."
Yeah, conveniently.
"And the young man didn't have any trouble with us. And so we had no reason to pay any attention to him. There are lots of guns in Texas." And just the other day on social media, I saw that photograph of some pasty-faced, doughy, paranoid white dude standing with an AR-15 slung over his shoulder, waiting to get a mocha choke of bullshit mm-hmm. with half-calf soy latte and double foam at his local Starbucks, because when Howard Schultz said, "Please don't bring your goddamn guns to my stores," Texans rose up in righteous indignation and said, "How are we ever going to stop the Sharia invasion of Mexico when it comes to Starbucks if we can't carry our guns in your stores?" And none of these stupid fuckers, Carol, even mm-hmm. realize that in Dodge City and Tombstone, the height of what we think of as 19th century Western gun culture.
Wild, wild west. You had to turn your gun in.
You had to turn your gun in if you wanted to go in and sit down and play cards with Miss Kitty and drink a shot of liquor.
They didn't want to play cards with Miss Kitty.
Really?
Trust me on this one.
I'll be dipped. The things you learn on this program.
True.
Well, I'm so glad you. I'm so glad you did call in. I know how busy you are, so we don't talk that much, but anymore. But dadgum, I cherish every conversation, Carol. I do.
Well, I appreciate that, and I cherish our conversations too. And I wanted to mention to everybody that my Atma Waterhouse Twitter account is no more. I have spent less and less time on social media, less and less time poking at bees. And I still got my Twitter account permanently banned. And I'm not even sure who I pissed off or what I said, but it was much calmer than it has been in a long time. And I just woke up one day and they were like, your account's suspended forever and you can never have another one. So, of course, I have another one.
Naturally.
I figured if I became a guy and I wanted a guy with an iconic name, Frank Beans.
Yes, Frank.
You know,
yes.
All you need is Frank and two beans to have a little privilege. So I tried two other women names and I couldn't get past it. But as soon as I became a white guy, I got a Twitter account. So it's Frank Beans. 96254802. I don't know what those numbers mean. It was just assigned. It's at Frank B. B-E. 96254802. So,
you know, there's something about that string of letters that makes me want to yell, Omaha, Omaha.
It probably spells out libtard or something. I don't know.
96254802.
4802.
96254802.
Yes, at Frank B.E. with those numbers.
Yeah, and I think if you just get Frank B.E. into the search bar there at Twitter,
it'll probably come up.
You'll probably populate.
It will. So now I'm just saying whatever I want to, and I figure if they suspend me, they suspend me, because you know only conservatives are having their First Amendment privileges taken away. So
right. Meanwhile, my timeline has become filthy with evangelical bots that I've never interacted with or shown any inclination toward wanting to
yeah.
see.
Yeah, mine was getting really bad too, but now it's like everybody disappeared and I can't even, I mean, 3,000 followers just went poof overnight, so.
Jesus, I hate that.
You know, shit happens.
Well, it does.
Only took me 9 years to get there, but I'll bet it takes me a hell of a lot less time to get up to that again.
Well, the worst part of it is that I guess the straw that broke the camel's back was you retweeted me.
Oh, no, this was on my brand new profile. The very first thing I did was retweet something that you wrote, and they suspended me for 24 hours. And I was like, what the hell? Really, Jack?
Because the tweet that you retweeted was absolutely benign, save for the fact that, well, it was me saying that Jeffrey Epstein was like Bob Ewell falling on his knife 37 times.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe somebody reported that under calling for someone to engage in self-harm.
Yeah, but you didn't get reported.
No! That privilege is something, ain't it?
I thought, ain't it? But I'm working on my white privilege. So when I get out of here, I'm going to go take my Frank and Beans for a stroll and see who I can piss off.
Oh, do please. And, of course, this conversation will be up as an archive in fairly short order.
Oh, thank you.
After the program. And once it is, I'll message you so that if you want to, you can share it with Dr. Phillips.
I am going to.
And he can know that he's in our thoughts and that we really, really appreciate the work that he and Ms. Friove.
That's actually his wife. Yeah. Betsy's his wife.
That's what I thought. And it's obvious they poured a lot of heart and soul into this to make sure that you know, to make sure that a generation that may not know this history gets a chance to.
Exactly. It's a good article, and it's one that once you start it, you can't put it down because you're like, how does it end?
Right.
Well, sadly, it hasn't yet.
No, it's that line from Shakespeare in Love. How's it end? I don't know. It's a mystery. By the way, you got a note from Rusty who says, Sister Carol, so glad she was on tonight. Really miss her. She speaks so clearly and from her heart. I love it.
And Stephen, me too, Rusty.
And Stephen New York says, hey, Carol, good to hear your voice. So remember, the minions are still out here. And you are still their queen.
You're loved, guys.
And of course,
I do mean that.
And of course, you're memorialized every prayer meeting Wednesday, standing at the vestibule door, with the crackling horn, solar powered cattle prod to bring the deacons in from out there smoking with the sinners in the parking lot.
I love the sound it makes.
Oh, well, especially on a humid day, and it gets their attention so well.
Indeed.
Carol Baker, take care, and give our best to young Demosthenes.
I shall. He's a good boy. You'll meet him someday.
I hope so.
I'll have him on.
Oh, good. That would be wonderful.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you take care, and you're never a stranger, but maybe we'll do this again someday soon.
I hope so.
All right. Take care, Carol.
And by the way, our
best to all of your wonderful colleagues there at work.
They're good people.
Yes, they are. I've seen the evidence of it. You take care.
All right. Bye. Thanks, buddy. Bye.
The one, the only, the incomparable, accept no substitutes, Sister Carol Baker, live from Kansas City, Missouri. So here we are at the top of the hour. Remember, please, I don't like to interrupt long-form conversations like that with reminders about fundraising, but we've got a very special challenge on the table tonight because Darlene from Connecticut has put forward a $100 challenge, and if it's met, she'll kick in another $50, which means we will knock out $250 of a $400 deficit this evening, meaning that we might not be in such desperate shape going into Friday on the front porch, and it would be very, very much helpful, okay? So that challenge is on the table. Run on over to headon.live and click on contribute if you'd like to help. You can always also go to you can just go to the PayPal site and use bobkincaid@gmail.com as the recipient address. It's all the same thing. Because if you've got an ad blocker, the interface at headon.live won't work. So hopefully that will resolve and be remedied. Hold calls for just a little bit here because we're at the top of the hour. And hey, it's Thursday, and I filibobstered right through the Green News Report this past Tuesday, and I hate to do that. So let's go and let's see what Brad and Desi have on the agenda for us this evening, shall we? Good deal. This is the horn. You know me. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Teen 2019.
Health effects can...
Well, what in the hell?
It's Thursday, August...
Well, that's a new wrinkle.
Health effects can range from skin rashes to organ failure, a threat many pet owners don't know about until it's too late.
Global warming fueled algae blooms killing dogs in several states.
I just want to say one word to you.
Yes, sir.
Plastics.
Big oil now pushing big time into plastics manufacturing. Plastic pollution found falling in snow in the Arctic. Plus,
it's more of a fossil fuel protection plan, and more importantly, it's against the law.
Democratic states and cities sue to stop Trump EPA's dirty power plan.
All of that dirt and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The Trump administration finalized plans to weaken the Endangered Species Act. There is one small piece of good news in this story. The rules are not retroactive to past endangered species. So, if you're already extinct, nothing to worry about. You're good to go.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, Donald Trump actually tilting at actual windmills once again.
Yes, yes, he was. President Trump was attacking the wind energy industry again in a rambling campaign-style appearance in Pennsylvania on Tuesday. We'll spare you his repetitive false claims about wind energy.
Thank you.
He was at a new Shell natural gas plant where he again tried to claim credit for the plant, even though it was begun under the Obama administration. However, that Shell plant is part of an ominous trend. It's part of the oil industry's push into plastics manufacturing, using their oil and natural gas as feedstock so they can maintain profitability as the world transitions away from polluting gasoline vehicles to clean electric vehicles.
So the world is getting tired of oil, and so big oil is now finding something even more reprehensible to move into? Plastics?
Yes, making even more plastic to pollute the world, even as governments are struggling with the cost of cleaning up plastic pollution, and even as there is a growing global plastics recycling crisis in the wake of China and other Asian countries banning nearly all plastic recycling trash from the West earlier this year. And now a new study shows that the plastic pollution problem is so ubiquitous, it is falling from the sky in snow in the Arctic. German researchers say they were shocked and dismayed by the sheer amount they found, 10,000 pieces of microscopic plastic pollution per liter of snow. They say it indicates that microplastic pollution is being transported on air currents, meaning that people may be inhaling microplastics, although the health implications of that are unclear.
So we have found plastic at the deepest parts of the ocean. We have found it in our fish, in our food supply, in our bodies, and now it is actually falling from the skies.
Yes.
And Donald Trump goes to a plant pushing more of it.
Yes.
Of course he does.
In other news, toxic blue-green algae blooms are forcing beaches and lakes to close around the country. Toxic algae blooms are caused by excessive fertilizer runoff from farms combined with high water temperatures due to global warming. Pet owners and parents of small children should be extra cautious. In North Carolina, a toxic blue-green algae bloom killed 3 dogs within hours of coming into contact with it. Similar toxic algae blooms have forced the closure of several lakes in northern New Jersey and 25 beaches on Mississippi's Gulf Coast, right at the height of the summer tourism season.
Well, you're just little Mary Sunshine today, aren't you?
Well, just wait. There's more.
Oh, boy.
Just days after severely weakening the Endangered Species Act to make it harder to protect species from extinction, the Trump administration on Wednesday announced it has denied protections for 6 imperiled species, from bees decimated by industrial agriculture to salamanders threatened by logging, to the iconic Joshua trees that are threatened by man-made global warming. The Trump administration has now declined to protect more than 60 species, and it's protected only 18, the lowest of any president at this point in his administration. Finally, some good news.
Thank you.
A coalition of 29 democratically controlled states this week sued to block the Trump administration from weakening the first ever emission standards for coal-burning power plants established by President Obama's landmark Clean Power Plan. The new lawsuit argues that the Trump EPA's replacement plan is insufficient to reduce emissions and that the EPA is negligent. Clean Air Act. In a press conference announcing the lawsuit, California Governor Gavin Newsom noted that the state is targets even faster than predicted while its economy is booming.
At a much faster clip, eat your heart out, Donald Trump, than the United States itself. And we are rolling back our greenhouse gas emissions.
So we're lowering our emissions out here in California, and yet it's not hurting the economy. In fact, our economy is growing faster than the rest of the country, even while we're doing that.
Exactly.
I'm starting to believe that Fox News has been lying to us about all of this for so many years. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
So this is what the truth feels like. This is what I had in mind. Yeah, this is what the truth feels like. And I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it.
I feel better now. I hate it when I screw up and blow off the Green News Report. Now that we're into the second hour, and remember, there is a challenge on the table to the tune of $100 from Darlene in Connecticut, and it badly needs to be met so that we won't have a $600 or more hole for Friday on the front porch. I first talked about how the month of August went to shit two Fridays ago. I updated on how the month of August was still a nightmare in a cesspit last Friday. So I guess tomorrow I will update. I'll update again. But I wanted to get to Clarence's note on the heels of the outbreak of freedom, NRA style freedom that took place in Philadelphia yesterday. One of the things that I noted, the whole thing finally ended at like 12:30. I guess he ran out of bullets, but one of the things that the mayor of Philadelphia pointed out was that regardless of how he acquired the weapons, got the bullets legally. And so the Philadelphia police force was forced to contend with a criminal suspect who was better armed, or at least better equipped with ammunition than any one individual officer was. Now, we don't know if he was a lawful, awful gun owner. That will have to come out later. But I had a note from Clarence, who comes from that neck of the woods, and he's taking a little bit of issue with some of the things that Todd said last night. Clarence says, Bob, the shootout hold, and you know what, it's not like, you know, I'm right, he's wrong. It might just be a matter of having been there and domiciled there somewhat more recently, because Todd's been in South Carolina stand for a little while now. Bob, the shootout holdout happened on the block where I used to live. I can honestly say that the neighborhood where this happened is crime-ridden. The reason I moved was because of the danger. There's a backstory for the reason for such terror. There was a time when a young man and a young woman finished high school. You could find a job with benefits in the neighborhood, 50s, 60s, and 70s. If you wanted to work, there was no problem finding a job at factories like the Bud Plant, RCA, Campbell Soup, and Tasty Cake Bakeries, to name just a few. They were in walking distance in some neighborhoods. The manufacturing base in Philly and many other large American cities have ceased to exist. This has left a void for thousands, if not millions, of people in the cities. The one sure thing for income is selling illegal drugs to people who are also in despair. People turn to this first to just survive. I don't care who you are, rich or poor, black or white, your stomach motivates your behavior. I have a name for this behavior. It's called pat your pockets. Every adult on this planet gets up every morning and performs this procedure to assess their financial situation. Most have a job to replenish and sustain their financial needs. Some have inheritance and investments to keep them there, families well off for generations. There are some who get through by legally acceptable business ventures. The path that young black man took was crazy, to say the least. The end result for most people in the illicit drug trade is either jail or death. He was very fortunate to be arrested without incident. Being from that neighborhood, I understand but don't condone what he and thousands of other folks do to survive. This behavior doesn't discriminate. It happens in your neck of the woods, too. Oh, yes, Lord, yes, it does, Clarence. I travel this country for a living as a long-distance truck driver. I see the communities that are devastated with poverty and despair. Part of the gun and drug problem would be solved if folks had a decent job with a decent life. All I can say is, three cheers for capitalism! My sarcasm is unapologetic. Thanks, Bob, for letting me tell you what I think. Thank you, Clarence, for sharing what you know. Because what you see and what you perceive is knowledge. And it's ever so much more valuable than belief. A lot more valuable. Hey, thanks very kindly to Mike in Cascadia. Mike, I appreciate it immensely. And thanks to Jack in Shreveport. $75 of Darlene in Connecticut's $100 challenge has been met. We need 25 more. And by the way, Steve from New York, who jumped in with a challenge yesterday evening, has put his $15 challenge back on the table, too. He'll match $15 when it comes in. So once we meet Darlene's challenge, we'll start on Steve's. And that will put us at 280. And leave only $120 to go to come even with the evening. Thank you, Jack, and thank you, Mike. Thanks a ton. Meanwhile, Ron and Raleigh, the frequent subject line that he uses, every damn day. And it's not just a matter of it feels like that. It's a matter of that's how it is. Ron says, I'm sure you'll get around to it, but I'll toss in my two cents. Dimwit Donnie pissed on the shoes of two of our congressional legislators on behalf of the filthy Bibi Netanyahu. There's never been a time in the history of the U.S. where a president has reached out to a foreign head of state to tell them to ban members of his government from entering the country. I'm sure none of Trump's swinish lickspittle followers will find a damn thing wrong with this traitorous behavior. The country is beyond redemption. I don't see how we recover from this crap. No, and eventually there will be a real, honest-to-God, no-kidding, liberal Democratic president. I'm not talking about some sort of centrist or next way or whatever. A real liberal. And it's going to suck a ton when he tells a congressional delegation, uh-uh, no, until things change, no member of Congress will be going to Israel. No. I happened to read a thread by the psycho Bibi Netanyahu talking about all of this. And it was his real live, honest to God, psychotic Bibi Netanyahu account. And you want to talk about just feeling filthy. The comment section and the rotten ass lies. Oh my God. It was on display in rich abundance. Thanks, Ralphs. Thank you very kindly for jumping in. And thanks to an anonymous member of the community. Both Steve's challenge and Darlene's challenge have been met. So that means we've only got, and let's see, that's, so that was, we've only got $110 left to go if my math on the fly is good. $110 left to go to finish the evening. Thank you. So both challenges are met, and $110, and we're even for the evening. And we don't have to look for a Friday on the front porch miracle. But that was particularly odious and particularly embarrassing. Rashida Tlaib, and Ilhan Omar, members of the Congress of the United States, were, well, they had an end run pulled on them by the President of the United States. And Bibi, who, again, is a psychopath, who is now unable to set foot in Spain because he's been, for all intentions, indicted there over the Israeli murders of the of people in the Gaza flotilla several years ago. That just happened recently. Well, Bibi put on his knee pads and did, and for the same, basically for the same monetary reasons, did for Trump what Stormy Daniels did. Ill. Yeah. Randy in PA, you know the old saying, it only takes 70 Philly police cruisers to stop one bad guy with a gun. Oh, that's cold. That's cold. Mercifully, there were no deaths. And I commend the Philadelphia Police Department for behaving in a professional manner and not shooting the defendant trying to escape. Hopefully no one will send him the penne alla arrabbiata with the Moscow marinara while he's in lockup. Oh, by the way, the coroner has had a chance to look at Jeffrey Epstein's corpse. Died of a broken neck. And in the human body, there's something called the hyoid bone, H-Y-O-I-D. And in a young human, the hyoid bone is kind of flexible. And in a male, it's right around where the Adam's apple is. And as a male ages, that hyoid bone goes from being sort of flexible and cartilaginously connected, well, it hardens over time so that it was fully hardened in Jeffrey Epstein's body, given his age. And that hyoid bone was broken. This tells us something interesting. In the world of medical pathology and post-mortem pathology, it is a well-known fact that, yes, the hyoid bone can be broken in a hanging, but it is far more often broken in a case of someone being strangled by having some other human's hands around his neck. Now, unlike Julius Geezer, I'm not advancing any paranoid conspiracy theory. He is shitting kittens with crocheted tails because, well, he knows what he did with Jeffrey Epstein. The rest of us don't, but he does. And I think I'm pretty sure he suspects that there may be records. And that's why he's out there saying, Hillary Clinton did it. God damn, that Trump impression was halfway to Mr. Burns.
Release the hounds. Excellent.
Damn. So there is a, if I understand, and by the way, while Bill Kermit Barr,
Kermit the Frog,
is saying that Epstein died of an apparent suicide, The last I read from the coroner in New York, the coroner's not saying that. And has not yet come to a definitive cause of death. It just gets weirder and weirder and weirder, doesn't it? Having begun with some weirdness. And speaking of Epstein-related weirdness, run on over to New Republic. There's an article there about New Mexico. Jeffrey Epstein had a ranch out there with a like $50 million mansion on it called Zorro Ranch. Yes, he's that creative. Zorro. A Z? A Z? And was associated with considerable other weirdness in New Mexico. And I suspect if you go to newrepublic.com and type in New Mexico, the article will pop. It's just, it's too bizarre to try to synopsize on air. And that brings us, to today. Well, no, let's go back to the Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib part. At about 9 a.m. today, Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbag's replacement, Stephanie Grisham, went to the podium to declare that no, Donald Trump didn't put pressure on the psychotic Bibi Netanyahu. She said, the Israeli government can do what it wants. And said that reports that Trump had gone whining to Bibi were inaccurate. But because this regime is, well, atne ute ait bre, if you one what I aim me, especially the hesitant prey. At 10 a.m., an hour after Stephanie Grisham had said, no, and he didn't put pressure on Bibi, dipshit Donnie got on Twitter. You know, it would be funny if it wasn't so goddamn frustrating and terrifying and exhausting. He got on Twitter and said,
it would show great weakness if Israel allowed Representative Omar and Rep. Tlaib to visit. They hate Israel and all Jewish people, and there is nothing that can be said or done to change their minds. Minnesota and Michigan will have a hard time putting them back in office. They're a disgrace.
Take a moment and think about the steady stream of racism and hatred and filth that Barack Obama endured coming from the likes of the previously mentioned Louis Asparagus Gohmert and Steve Cantaloupe's King and the waxen Trey Gowdy and Devin Nunes, and Kevin McCarthy, Steve Scalise, Moscow Mitch McConnell. And never, not once, did he attempt to interfere with their performance of their congressional duties. Had he wanted to, Barack Obama could have burnt Louis Asparagus Gohmert to the bottom of his stalks. He could have heated up Steve Cantaloupe's King so much he was that he would have cracked like the overripe melon that he is. He didn't do it because he had a sense of the both the grace and the gravity of the presidency. Those days are long damn gone. As Ron and Raleigh says, the country is beyond redemption. I don't see how we recover from this crap. I'm not sure that I buy into the idea that we are beyond redemption. Redemption is always an option from a philosophical standpoint. But to say I don't know how we recover, I can agree with entirely. Because chickens do come home to roost. You know, there's a truth to that old saying because, well, if you've got chickens, and I got a neighbor down here that's practically setting up a little artisanal chicken farm. I take a little shortcut when I head over to go to Kroger's across the river. And I get to experience on an almost daily basis the triumph and the joy of watching a chicken cross the road. And I roll down the windows and I yell, "Good for you!" Why did the chicken cross the road? To prove to the possum that it could be done. But those chickens roam the entire neighborhood all day, every day. But in the evening, they come home to roost without fail. There aren't any, like, juvenile delinquent chickens that just stay out and terrorize the neighborhood or some sort of badass gang rooster who hangs out under somebody's window waiting for sunrise to crow. They're right there where they're supposed to be when the sun comes up. And for all the evil that Donald Trump has done, what he has done is open the Pandora's bottle for even further evil to be done. And God help this country. And we all know how I feel about God. Once Trump is gone, God help this country if another Republican becomes president of the United States. And we have not deloused the Republican Party. Albert in Rhode Island says, we need to pass a new gun law. It'll require all assault weapon owners to enlist in the U.S. Army Reserve for 20 years. Plus, if we get involved in a war, they'll get sent overseas first. A lady in New York City has started a petition. I saw this yesterday. Tens of thousands of signatures on the petition. She wants a one-block street section in New York City to be renamed President Barack H. Obama Street. The effect of that name change would be to put Trump Tower on Barack Obama Street. 295,000 people have signed the petition. And you know what? New York City just might do it. Stoke the stroke. Note from Harold. I was raised a white nationalist by Dad and Grandpa. We had the stars and bars everywhere and paintings of General Lee and Jefferson Davis. I broke out of it when I was 25 and moved from Little Rock to Minneapolis. Growing up in a racist environment was horrifying. My dad and Grandpa both died, and the vast majority of the family rejects those beliefs. But I still have a couple of cousins who are extremely racist. A reminder that racism is taught, not, it's passed from generation to generation, not by genetics, but by active teaching. Rhonda says, huge crowd tonight for Trump in New Hampshire. He's in New Hampshire? I don't follow the little toxic fucker much anymore. Rhonda says, this surprises me given how toxic he has become in the last year. Well, what you do is you make sure and you pad the audience. That's what happened in Western PA. A couple of days ago when he was there. I actually found it quite interesting because he was, and it's not the first time that human beings have been used as props, stage props for a Republican candidate. I remember when they trotted out coal miners to serve as stage props for Bishop Willard Romney, people who worked for Murray Energy. But a bunch of workers were used to pad the numbers for Trump's appearance in Pennsylvania, and they even sent out a memo to the workers. President Trump visit to site, Tuesday, 8/13/19. Start time will be 7 a.m. We will not be inspecting scaffolds for day shift. Everyone is to report to B tents. Once you're on site, you will not be permitted to leave until the all clear is given in the afternoon. Do not bring lunch boxes or backpacks. Breakfast will be provided. Do not wear steel-toe shoes. Tennis shoes are acceptable. Wear long-sleeve, high-visibility clothing. No metal in your pockets, no large belt buckles. You will be walking through a metal detector at the Trump speech location. All personnel will be bused to the Trump speech location. Prepare to stand for several hours. You will be standing through your normal lunch period. Lunch will not be provided. You know what's obvious about this? That's a non-union workforce. Because any shop steward, any business agent would say, stop right there. This ain't going to happen. You will be paid according to your clock scans. It is extremely important that you receive a scan in out. No scan, no pay. They were paid to be there. Again, I've seen this I don't know how many times with coal companies here in Appalachia. Phones are allowed at the event. They are to be turned to silent mode. You know, this would be a lot better with a German accent. Let's try it that way. No yelling, shouting, protesting, or anything viewed as resistance will be tolerated at the event. An underlying theme of the event is to promote goodwill from the labor unions. Your building trades leaders and job stewards have agreed to this. Oh, wait, it is a union job. And the shop stewards and the business agents said, okay. Your attendance is not mandatory. This will be considered an excused absence. However, those who are not in attendance will not receive overtime pay on Friday. Foreman, please have all your personnel sign on the reverse and return to Chris Fannin by the end of shift today. Yeah, you don't have to show up, but you don't get overtime on Friday if you do. So they didn't just pay him to be there. They, by God, paid him time and a half. God, I can remember a time when coal workers were such pathetic Republican lickspittles that they'd show up for regular time. Now you got to give these guys time and a half. So, par for the course. Darlene in Connecticut with a question. Query two of the week. What was Epstein's business that garnered him multi-millions besides sex trafficking? Bit hazy on that one. And although your Trump impression is quite good and hilarious, I thought the drawn-out sniff only occurred when he has to read something someone else wrote. Stoke the stroke! Well, I just throw the sniff in. I was reading something. Hence the sniffing. Epstein is a bit of an enigma. Here's a guy who gets hired to teach at the Dalton School by Bill Barr's daddy, even though he has no credentials for doing it. After that, he gets pulled into the world of high finance, even though he has no experience and no credentials at that. In the meantime, he's being backed by a shadowy millionaire whose name I think we still don't know, who hands him a shit ton of wealth to manage. And then because people up in the thin oxygen realm of great wealth, well, they're not very good at thinking for themselves. They're mostly just little sheeple and followers of, it's the mean girls clique from junior high school. Only it's guys with a lot of money. And whoever is at the top of that list dictates the behavior of everybody else. Once again, a reminder that great wealth is no measuring stick for great genius or even great vision. So, Darlene, I guess I'm no good on query of the week number two. I'm as hazy as you are. Meanwhile, today, I guess somewhat after he had fucked over his own White House spokescreep, Stephanie Grisham, Nitwit Nero decided to have a little talk with some of those reporters from the fake news, definitely fake news. And so he was asked about gun violence. This is not going to play well.
Good. He loves New Hampshire. He loves our country. If he did it, I think it'd be very formidable.
What do you expect him to say?
We're going to look at that very closely, and we're looking at the whole gun situation. I do want people to remember the words mental illness. These people are mentally ill.
Time out. I have over the years pointed out that when people commit these atrocities, the vast majority of them are never adjudged not guilty by reason of insanity. Because they cannot meet the legal standard for proof of insanity. I want people to remember the words mental illness. Not every lawful gun owner, like Patrick Cruges, who squeezes the trigger of a gun repeatedly and slaughters people for being Mexican, or for others for being black, or others for being gay, or, maggots. Not everyone who does that suffers from mental illness. Racism is not a mental illness. Hate is not a mental illness. It is often criminal. But the people who murdered Viola Liuzzo, Cheney, Goodwin, and Schwarmer. They weren't mentally ill. They were just homicidal racists. The white men who bombed the Baptist church and murdered little girls in Birmingham, not mentally ill. In fact, and you won't hear anybody else say this, his mental illness quip there is fundamentally the equivalent of saying there were very fine people on both sides in Charlottesville. It is the same thing. He is providing cover for racists, murderous, vicious, white supremacist racists. But because he is President Dunning-Kruger effect, he doesn't know what he doesn't know. And so he's going to make it worse. So we got to remember mental illness. You remember mental illness? Does anybody remember laughter? I wonder who will get that remark.
And nobody talks about that, but these are mentally ill people. And people have to start thinking about it. I think we have to start building institutions again because, you know, if you look at the 60s and 70s, so many of these institutions were closed.
Well, no, Chlamydia Claudius. They weren't closed in the 60s and 70s. They were closed in the 80s. Again, being as how we're way out in front of the curve here. We've already talked about this. They were closed in the 80s under the guise of humanity by Reagan Republicans. We can't, well, Mommy, we can't just warehouse these people. We've got to turn them out. But they didn't give a fuck about mentally ill people. They were looking to find money to steal to hand to Republican cronies. Because that's what Republican presidents do. They come in, they wreck the federal budget, declare that government doesn't work, and then hand out the proceeds to their big dollar donors. 60s and 70s. You fucking moron.
Go onto the streets, and that was a terrible thing for our country. They closed them. Cities couldn't afford them, and they closed them. I mean, I can tell you in New York, they closed a lot of them. And the people went out, they went out onto the streets, and it's a terrible thing. But a lot of our conversation has to do with the fact that we have to open up institutions. We can't let these people be on the streets.
I wish I could say that his stupidity is stunning. But 2.5 years in, I don't know about you, but I'm no longer stunned. My capacity to be surprised by how stupid that venal little pissant is has been forever diminished. He is who we thought he is. Oh, and by the way, I was talking about Jeffrey Epstein's broken neck. It wasn't just a broken neck. The autopsy found that it was broken in multiple places. Makes you kind of wonder how that happens when you hang yourself. Yeah, well. And Agnes showed something to me last night. I'm not going to run the audio. But you might want to go out and look up an old Barbara Walters interview, if you've never seen it before, with Donald Trump. It was back when he didn't quite look like a cartoon character. And it was along about the time of the release of his book, which, of course, he didn't write a word of, called Trump Surviving at the Top. And Barbara Walters actually does a passing fair job of not putting up with his bullshit and lies. It's interesting from a historical context to note that he is and always has been a bullshitter and a liar and a con artist. We know this innately, but it is interesting. It's interesting to see it verified in video and audio form. And going back to the Netanyahu Trump business, how bad is it? How bad is it? It's so bad that even Shepard Smith over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda mocked him for it. Mocked Bibi and mocked Trump. The president tweets and Netanyahu forbids, Shepard Smith declared. And there's a bit of an update. You remember we talked last night about Steve Cantaloupe's King saying that if it wasn't for rape and incest, there'd be no humans left on the planet. Well, he got schooled later in the day. One of his constituents, who is a school teacher, went up and explained what incest meant to Steve Cantaloupe's King. Retired Mason City school teacher Katie Kohler at the King's Town Hall Forum said, as a fourth grade teacher, I had a student that was raped by their uncle and became pregnant. I was thinking of Trump, that's why I almost said president. As a fourth grade teacher, I had a student that was raped by their uncle and became pregnant. It does happen, I do know, at the time that the parents chose to terminate the pregnancy, and I understand why. A 10-year-old child. I'm just wondering. I have my own personal beliefs. But if it's a zero-tolerance policy, I'm concerned of the health and safety of our youth. Hearing that, Steve Cantaloupe's King responded, I've never heard of a case that extreme until today. Under the circumstances we're in right now, I'd rather deliberate on this and try to get you an answer back, which is the classic bullshit answer of any Republican who gets caught, well, hip deep in his own bullshit. She explained to King that the case was not unique, it was not that extreme, and that in the course of her being a teacher, she'd heard a lot of examples of little girls being raped. Talking to Iowa Starting Line, she explained, I try to talk to people face to face, so that's why I came here, just to see, because I needed answers. And then added, that 10-year-old little girl I told him about would have died without an abortion. But that's the thing. Republicans don't care about 10-year-old little girls. Don't much care about 10-year-old little boys. Boy or girl, they didn't give a flying fuck in a rat's ass about the little boys and little girls 5, 6, 7 years old at Sandy Hook. They don't give a tinker's damn about a 5-year-old orphaned in El Paso because a lawful gun owner blew away her mommy and her daddy. I'll deliberate on this and try to get you an answer back. What are you going to do, Steve? Take it to your white supremacist God in prayer. Jesus. Darlene in Connecticut says, I hear Trump's comment on reopening or building new institutions for the mentally ill differently. And the prospect is frightening. I hear him essentially laying the groundwork to open more concentration camps. You are not unreasonable in hearing that, Darlene. No. See, everything that a Republican complained of from between during the 8 years of the Obama administration was merely projection for what they had plans to do. You remember when Agenda 21 was going to cause the UN to put up concentration camps in abandoned Walmarts in West Texas? Where's one of the concentration camps? In an abandoned Walmart in West Texas. Remember during the 8 years of the Obama administration, the birthers, deathers, baggers, birchers, and booger eaters shrieking that Obama was going to open FEMA re-education camps and all the good rock-ribbed Republican, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical fundamentalists were going to be rounded up and taken to those tent cities? With Tangerine Tiberius in the White House, we now have tent cities full of innocent human beings. Projection, 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 projection. Steve in New York says he is who we thought he was. I'm going to disagree with you there. I think he's much worse than we thought, largely, because we didn't think anyone could be that bad. Well, there were a lot of people who thought he didn't have a prayer of being elected. But I said he could and would be. A few of us lone voices crying in the wilderness tried to warn about it. We were, I guess, ignored. So we've passed into the third hour of the program. We've got $110 to go to finish fundraising for the evening. Thanks to everybody who's jumped in. Thank you to Steve for your challenge, and thank you, Darlene, for yours. Thank you so very much, and thanks to the people who responded. Irwin, out in Montana, says, Republicans and mental institutions. The thought of a Republican approach to mental illness and institutions somewhat is fearful to me. I recall Stalin getting rid of his political enemies by declaring them mentally ill. Remember, and remember what he said about mental institutions in conjunction with what he said or what was leaked about them wanting to censor the internet. Well, that'll be me under the Southwest Guard Tower selling Lucy's. Got to take care of it. Got to take care of your nicotine habit somehow. And by the way, I'm going over to the Skype line in a moment, but just a reminder, the stress line is also available to you. What? A Wall Street Journal report claiming Trump wants to buy Greenland? Greenland? Has caught people by surprise. Via the Wall Street Journal, President Trump made his name on the world's most famous island. Now he wants to buy the world's biggest. He's gone. He's gone. At this point, it's just dosage maintenance. President Trump has repeatedly expressed interest in the U.S. acquiring the Danish territory of Greenland. As many make light of the surprising concept, others are wondering why the United States would want to purchase the icy domain. Yeah, this is I don't miss drinking every day. Just every now and then. And that's the one where you tip the bottle until it's empty, and then you throw it at the garbage can across the bar to stop the clock. Holy sheep shit, Batman.
You know, I've always thought I'd like to buy Greenland.
Fuck me, Dad. Arnold reminds us, I know no conservatives who are not at some level a racist. Not all Republicans are racists, but practically all racists are Republicans. Ron in Raleigh says, well, hell, I'm sure that Dolt 45 means that he wants to open humane institutions that will treat those with mental disabilities with kindness and sympathy. They won't be run by the for-profit mental health cabal. Ron didn't send a sarcasm emoji, but I'm sort of treating it as read. All right, like I said, the stress line is open as well. If you want to engage in some conversation, let me make sure that it is properly paired. And it is. So 844-843-4676. And that'll get you on the stress line. In the meantime, let's see what's going on with Scott. Hey, Scott.
Well, it's I love you more today than yesterday, but twice as much as tomorrow or half as much as tomorrow or something like that. I don't know, Bob. Is that what's troubling you, Bunky?
You do that almost as well as Agnes does, because she does the Mary Tyler Moore, oh, Bob, really well.
Well, this wasn't. Don't confuse that with my Mary Tyler Moore. That was Eddie Lawrence, the old philosopher.
Yes.
Anyway, it's before somebody's time, not yours, but I'm sure there's a lot of young people saying who. Let's see. I had a couple of things in mind. I got a TV viewing tip, so put a bookmark there. I've got a tech support suggestion for you, so put a bookmark there. I lived in Texas. Oh, it was so good to hear Sister Carol after so many moons. And I'm serious. For 64 cents a day, she or anyone in Kansas City can adopt me, and I'll come back and revolutionize radio there. Yeah, right. except for the winter time. I'll do my winter programming from here. Thank you very much. I lived in Texas for a while in the early 90s, maybe about a year and a half down in Corpus Christi. So it's been long enough that I've forgotten the official state song of Texas, but they ought to change it, whatever it is, to this one. Mamas, don't let your babies grow up to be assholes. I think that would be an appropriate fit for the Lone Star State in this day and age. That's just, or maybe it's just me. As far as Trump making deep and profound pronouncements about mental illness, now let me see if I've got this straight. Now, medicine, the practice of medicine, is a branch of science, is it not?
You are correct, sir.
and climate science. Hell, the name itself gives you a hint, is a branch of science, is it not?
Yes.
All right. Trump maintains that climate change is a Chinese hoax. Okay, does he not? Okay.
You're three so for three.
What in the name of Slim Pickens riding the bomb down to end it all forever and ever business does Trump have making any comments even remotely connected to science, in this case, the medical science, head-shrinking science? I mean, it's like, and I sent you an email just earlier, a few minutes ago, with a picture of me, circa 1978, with a T-shirt that has a message of how I was feeling then and how I'm feeling now. Did you open that and look at it?
Yes, I've got it right here in front of me.
And what does it say on the shirt, Bob?
What it says is, I used to be disgusted, now I'm just amused.
Well, that's pretty much where I am now.
Right.
I mean, I'm concerned, and I used to be disgusted, but you talk about stunned. I left stunned behind on the day of the supposed inaugural address, which I liked better in the original German, I might add. But this man has got hot and cold running stupid in every room in his head. I mean, in his head there are many mansions, and there's madness and snakes.
And there's morans in them.
Yes, and icky stuff, Bob, icky stuff. So that's my take on Trump. I need a countdown clock in here so that we can count down the days to two critical points. Number one would be the election in 2020, and number two would be January 20th, 2021. And I'm doing everything that I possibly can to make both of those dates count in a positive, appropriate way.
If you really want to matter, you'll pack up and move the hell to Ohio. Or Pennsylvania or Michigan or Wisconsin. I can highly recommend Wisconsin.
Oh, God, I couldn't deal with the winters, Bob. I don't do cold weather anymore.
They know how to deal with the winter. You buy the nice coat, you get the boots, they keep you.
Well, if I were going to go anywhere, I'd go to Ohio because I was in Cincinnati there for, I don't know, about 5 years in the mid-90s.
Baby, if you ever wonder. Nope, go ahead.
WKLP.
Wonder whatever became of me. I'm living on the air in Cincinnati. Do you know who the theme song to WKRP? Do you know who that's about?
I used to know, but I've forgotten.
A likely story.
No, seriously, was it me?
No. it's about one of the characters in the show.
Well, isn't it about? It's about the young man.
Yeah, it's about Andy. Yeah, Andy Travis.
Yeah. Okay, I forget his real name.
So do I.
Well, who is it about?
No, it's about Andy Travis.
Oh, okay.
The PD.
No, I thought you meant it was about a real life radio.
No. I always associated with it, because, in that early episode, Johnny's got the mug with all the names on it. Because he can't remember. He can't remember what he's airing. because he's a journeyman and he's been in all the markets and everything. I was associated with it, but no, it's about Andy Travis.
Okay. Well, every radio person I've ever known really relates to that sitcom, WKRP in Cincinnati, simply because all of them remember real-life counterparts to virtually all of the characters
in
that
show. And
to
a certain extent, the same thing with NBC's News Radio.
Yeah,
which of course had to be ruined because his wife had to go and off, Phil Hartman.
Phil Hartman, yeah, Jesus, that was such I wept that day. That man was such a talent. But You've got Mr. Carlson on WKRP, the pompous, ignorant owner of the station. You've got the sleazy sales manager. Every time I used to play Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves by Cher, I used to dedicate that to the sales department. You know, sort of they're marching around the breakfast table before they go out to sling rate cards. Jesus. And Jennifer, there were two women on the show. There was the one played by Burt Reynolds' one-time wife, Lonnie Anderson. Was that Jennifer?
Yeah, that was Jennifer.
But who was the young girl, kind of a hippie-looking?
Well, I mean, her character's girl. Name was Bailey.
Bailey, yeah. What did she do on the show? I can't remember. It's been so long.
She was kind of an up-and-coming programming traffic.
Okay.
I don't mean like with the copter. I mean, you know what traffic is in a radio station.
Figuring out the log so that you don't have two automotive spots back to back in one break.
And in that universe, eventually she would have gone on to become a program director.
Yeah. That was a good show, Bob. That was a very good show.
Yeah, Gary Sandy. Thank you, Ron and Raleigh. Gary Sandy played Andy Travis.
Yeah. But the Herb Tarlick, the sales guy, God, I knew.
Every radio salesperson I ever knew was Herb Tarlick.
And I even knew a few Mr. Carlsons.
And Jan Smithers, Jack in Shreveport. Jan Smithers was Bailey.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Jack reminds us that's by memory. There were a lot of us who thought that Bailey was by far the more interesting and beautiful than. But now it's a little weird to admit that once upon a time you sort of crushed on people on TV.
Yeah, I would say that as a semi-heterosexual
Bailey Quarters.
As a semi-heterosexual average white male, my crush would be along the lines of Bailey before it would be Jennifer.
Right, because another generation said, no, definitely Marianne, not Ginger, definitely Marianne.
Oh, yeah.
Although there is the weird and kinky contingent that said, no, Lovey Howell.
Oh, God. What was it? I was listening to an interview with...
My father had a crush on Della Street.
Oh, God, that's going way back.
My mother didn't appreciate it at all.
And wasn't she the mother of a famous young man who became an actor? I can't think of her name. Della Street was played by... Wasn't it Barbara something?
Yeah, I think she was a Barbara.
But I believe her son was in the realm of acting.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
This is really trivial. I may be wrong, but I don't think I am. When they tried to reboot, back before reboot was a word, when they tried to reboot Perry Mason, I think her son played Paul Drake.
And wasn't...
And the millennials
Markham?
Are dropping like flies.
Yes, I know, Bob. Wasn't Monty Markham... didn't he play the part, the actor Monty Markham, didn't he play the part of Perry Mason in the reboot?
I don't know. God, I just remembering the name makes me, who would have cast that?
And William Tolman, I believe his name was, who played the district attorney, Hamilton Berger,
mm-hmm.
who only won, I think, two cases.
How that man got reelected, I'll never know. He had to go up against people besides Perry Mason, so maybe he won those cases.
He foreshadowed our current state of things.
And do you know that there was one episode in the whole series? Earl Stanley Gardner played the judge.
Oh yes, because he created the Perry Mason novels or stories or whatever. But that's. God, man, this is somewhere I didn't think we'd be going today. But then again, when I call, anything's possible.
Anything can happen.
Know?
Yes.
Anything can happen.
You know that's because you are a bon vivant and a raconteur.
Well, it stems back to my radio training. They abhor dead air, so you must be able to speak halfway intelligently about virtually any topic for 2 minutes while they correct the
right.
The
and as a radio professional, emphasis on the halfway part. Right.
Yeah, well, definitely. You can't come across as really knowing what you're talking about. You'll lose all credibility, Bob. What the hell's wrong with you, man? But anyway.
Speaking of which, every now and then when I'm out in the car, I turn on local radio, and most of it's country music, and I can take some, but I'm where country music's concerned, I'm more of a classicist and a purist. And this, what passes for modern country music is actually, no, see, dadgummit, I can't turn that dog on it. What passes for country music wouldn't have gotten recorded by, adult contemporary pop back in the 70s and 80s. So I'm toddling around in the car, and you know how people who jock, they live for those little little kicker stories, you know, the human interest stuff.
Yeah.
And this is as much about me as it is about whoever the ignorant soul was who was voice tracking, because it's not jocking anymore. It's not live.
Oh, it's all piped in from somewhere else.
No. I mean, even if the station is local, which this station was, you voice track, which means that hours and hours and hours before that that day part is rolling, you've gone in, the music is pre-programmed, and you just voice track X number of seconds in between the breaks.
And the computer drops in the
right
bits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Way back when I was doing terrestrial radio, I got a kick out of it because I'd voice track some on the classic rock station, and I did it in a somewhat drunken English accent, and he was an old retired roadie who had moved to the Bexley area. And it was fun, just because it was a chance to do a character and whatever. But it wasn't as fun as working live. So I knew what I was hearing had been voice tracked. But in this break, the guy who was voice tracking it, good voice, had nice pipes, said, "And meanwhile, who would ever put, you know, who would ever want to put an octopus on their face? Well, one woman did." And I forget if she was in Hawaii or some exotic location, because this, you go to the wires and you just pull this shit up. And he says, "And that's, and a friend on another boat had just caught an octopus, and she thought it would be great fun to put the mollusk on her face." At which point, I'm driving down the road screaming, "Cephalopod! Cephalopod! You fuckwit! Cephalopod!" She rapidly found out 8 good reasons for not doing it. The octopus bit her face twice. Cephalopod, dumbass! And when it hurt for several days and she went to the doctor explained to her that the octopus had injected her face with venom and it would probably hurt for a couple of months. So, hey, everybody, don't put an octopus on your face. Cephalopod! And hey, Siri, give me the phone number. Siri just heard me. I was actually on the verge of call, but then I went, oh, it's voice tracked.
Yeah.
Mollusk. I mean, am I wrong? Mollusk.
No, I don't think so.
Is a mollusk not a thing that lives in a shell?
Right.
Under the water?
Yeah.
And yes, I recognize that, like I said, this is a lot more about me than it is about that person.
Well, it's unfortunate, but see, that's a symptom of the state of the industry. And I did not call to talk about this, but I will, since we're on the topic. I fortunately was pretty much exiting the great radio landscape just as voice tracking was becoming a thing. We're talking about the late 90s, I guess. It hadn't really taken hold. I mean, there were programs being piped in from elsewhere, syndicated shit via satellite, okay? Thus eliminating job opportunities for baby DJs in medium and small markets. Because if they're filling everything but the morning drive with piped in content, where is a kid going to learn?
Right.
You know?
Yeah, sure.
So there's that part of it. But at one time, and this is true also of situation comedies on TV, at one time, the premise of creating these programs was somewhat based on the notion that the viewers actually knew something, that they had more than a dozen viable brain cells to bang together, okay? And they would get references, and they would get connections, and they would get stuff, okay? But so the sitcoms, for the most part, just cannot suck enough in today's world. And there's also the business of, like you say, radio. Where did the baby DJs go to learn their trade? Okay. And you probably got some guy who works a live shift on the FM, which is a different format, voice tracking a shift or two for the AM. And it's just, and what do the groupies do? Okay. What do the kids do who want to grow up to be baby DJs?
Well, no, that was another thing. Welcome to the old DJ's home, by the way. On the phone with me is Scott as we relive the glory days of live radio.
Teen Idol in the 70s, still idol here.
No, it was cool. You might have only been getting paid minimum wage, which in my case was, I think, $3.35 an hour. But
we had benefits, Bob. At every job I ever worked at, promo records.
I was free. Yeah, I was free to take all the cutout records I wanted.
Yeah,
because they were terrible. But what I was getting, you know, the benefit that came with that $3.35 an hour was that you got to be the entire community's best friend.
Yeah.
From midnight to six. And it's not like people were lining up to shake your hand or, you know, have you kiss the baby or anything. But there was a sense of satisfaction that accompanied it because, you know, you'd get the calls in the middle of the night and it's like, hey man, I tell you what, I'm working the graveyard and I sure would appreciate hearing Debbie Boone singing "You Light Up My Life."
Yeah.
Hey, this is for Billy Joe Bob.
Down there at the plant.
Yeah, right. Down there at the plant. Oh, my God.
When I was in Kansas City doing overnights in the mid to late 80s.
Is the midnight shift not just the best shift ever to work radio?
Oh, Bob, I'm telling you. I would do it again in a heartbeat if I could do it live and local. And I would only take like $3.15 an hour and promo albums or whatever. But some of my biggest listener base were nurses. We had like a half dozen hospitals around and about the Kansas City area. And those nurses on the overnight shift were just as game as I was in terms of, you know, I used to kid them. Along about 4 o'clock, I would remind them that coming up at 4:15, the Pointer Sisters doing their rendition of Jump. So get those gurneys lined up in the hallway for the nightly gurney races down at St. Whatever Hospital, St. Mary's Hospital or St. Luke's, whatever it was. Jesus.
Probably some of the best radio fun I ever had, I didn't even get paid for. I just wanted to keep my hand in, so when I transferred, when I transferred to WVU in college, they had 100,000 watt FM.
All right.
I think it was 100,000 back then. I mean,
was it freeform for alternative or?
It was, yeah. I mean, there were a couple of shows. You know, there was the obligatory Grateful Dead lunch hour. Dead lunch or whatever it was called. But, you know, we played a lot of new wave and a lot of punk. And you were still queuing up vinyl. And it was a university with about, 20,000 students at 3 o'clock in the morning on Saturday night to Sunday morning.
Oh, God.
The phones never stopped ringing.
Oh, hell no. Were you allowed to have people drop by and visit?
Weren't supposed to.
Yeah, I know that. But did you have them, I guess, is what I should have.
Yes.
Oh, I had some groupies who would come by to visit.
Hang out, yeah, have fun.
And I mean, some of the best dope I ever had.
Yes, yes.
Was from visitors. And the one and only time I ever tried coke was the woman who worked the shift right before me, which was like the Love Songs and Dedications program, weepy, sappy stuff. But she would get off at like midnight or 1 a.m., whatever it was, and she had a friend who was visiting, and they were putting this thing up their nose and sniffing like an inhaler. And I said, oh, wow. And they said they couldn't believe
you want a bump?
They couldn't believe I'd never tried it before. And somewhere around here on a cassette, I've got the air check of my first top of the hour ID after taking a snort in each nostril.
Tell me you're not lying. Tell me you're going to tear me. You're going to tell me you're going to tear the apartment apart for that after you're done. And even if you have to hold your cell phone up to the cassette deck to the speaker to get it, tell me you're going to make a sound file of that and send that to me.
Well, I will find it. It may take a while, and then I'll have to find my cassette recorder, and then I'll have to hook it up to the computer and make it a digital file.
Not to just be a total mercenary asshole. We could probably fund the horn for a month. Auctioning that sound bite.
Oh, God.
Because that's one of the things I miss. I used to have 15-inch reels of stuff I did on air.
Yeah.
I don't have a single top-of-the-hour newscast from CNN, and I have absolutely nothing from my local radio days.
God, I've got too much. Because I used to air check everything.
Well, yeah.
I've got at least two standard size moving boxes, maybe two and a half standard size moving boxes of cassettes. Very few of them labeled, and those that are labeled are not accurately labeled. So there could be anything on those tapes. We could find the missing 18 and a half minutes from Nixon's White House Oval Office conversations on one of them tapes. I mean, geez. But, and one time, there's an air check of me, I don't know what it was. It was a song, and the intro wasn't long enough. And this was my first break, top of the hour ID break. And I noticed the intro wasn't going to be long enough for me to do what I wanted to do. So I stopped it. I pulled the card out and put another card in. I said, okay, let's try this again, live on the air. I was all the time fucking around. I used to love that stuff. Because, you know, to the extent that you can play with their minds and do unexpected stuff and also dwell in the theater of the mind and get the people's imaginations working and describe things, word pictures of absurd things, it's highly entertaining. I don't mean to toot my own horn, but you know this. Jesus, you do this all the time.
You could make hours disappear in the production room.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. But but my very first radio gig in 1973 at a little one-lung station, FM station, about 40 miles outside of D.C., out in the Maryland suburbs, there was an older woman. Now, I say an older woman. You got to remember, I was 19 at the time, okay? So to me, anybody a few years older than me was an older woman. I would say the woman was probably 20 years younger than I am now, maybe 25 years, in her late 30s, early 40s. But to me, at 19, she was an older woman. She would bring me pan-fried chicken that she would slave over a hot stove, fix it up real nice, put it on the paper towels to drain, wrap it in more paper towels, and then wrap that
We're not talking about the deep fried stuff. We're talking about the iron skillet stuff in about a quarter of an inch of oil. Ooh,
yes. And then she would wrap that in a kitchen towel, put it in a basket, and bring me chicken about once a month. And I don't know what it was. She apparently was in.
This is not one of the women you went on to marry and divorce.
No, no.
How? No, she, how, in the name of God, is that not the case?
Well, back then, you know, what did I know?
You were vain. You were vain, and you were worried about May and September. And yeah, I know, sure.
Yeah, it's the old Maydoldy song. It's a long,
you were spending. You were spending all of your money on T-shirts with catchy slogans like "If you're not disgusted, you're not paying attention" on them.
Yeah,
I haven't gotten a note yet, but I've got a sneaking sense that Lady B is out there crafting an email, because I know this is going right to the heart of her, because when I said earlier, I just dropped that. In. Does anybody remember laughter? I immediately got a note.
I missed that, whatever it was.
I immediately got a note from Lady B that said, "Oh, Percy, do you need your lemon squeezed till the juice runs down your leg? Oh, Jimmy, stairway to heaven indeed." And meanwhile, Steve over in the chat room, Steve from Georgistan, immediately said, "Yep." He said, "Led Zeppelin, the song remains the same." And that's it, yeah, because it's from the Live in Concert song remains the same movie, that's just a drop in the middle. It's in the 14 or 27 minute rendition of Stairway to Heaven, and does anybody remember laughter?
Well, yeah. Stairway to Heaven was like 7 minutes and some odd seconds.
Yeah, but in the concert,
was that Nights in White Satin?
Well, they both were. They both were. But
that was my run to the Quick Trip song that was two blocks away. I'd fire that thing up, jump in the car, or drive over, get me my Diet Cokes, which I was drinking like water at the time, and a couple of packs of cigarettes.
Because you'd already been through a couple. Not that you were smoking them. You were just lighting them up and letting them burn, because it provided your superhero powers to be a DJ through the night.
Ah, God. It gives you that nice, ballsy voice, you know, and probably throat cancer. I don't know.
Nat King Cole said he wouldn't quit smoking because it gave him that beautiful, resonant baritone.
Yeah. You know, it dawned on me the other day, one day last week, the 6th or 7th, whatever. You know, it's been 20 years since I've had a cigarette.
Golly, Moses.
I couldn't believe it.
I'm proud of you. So how old were you when you quit?
Well, I'm 65 now, so that's 55, 45. Yeah.
You quit at the perfect time.
You know, and the weird thing was, Bob, I had quit twice before. I had quit in 89, late 89, for 4 months, 2 months prior to and 2 months after my brain tumor surgery, okay? And then a few years later, I quit for 10 months, but then broke up with a woman I was seeing at the time and immediately went out and bought a pack and got rehooked. And it wasn't until August, either 6th or 9th, of 1999, that I was sitting there one day, chain smoking, as I often did, and was feeling this tightness in my chest, like not pain exactly, but something noticeable.
Unpleasant.
Noticeable, and it got my attention. And I said, well, you know, I better call and go to the doctor and see what I can find out about this. So I went, and they did the stress test on the treadmill where they got you wired up, and you're on the incline treadmill and all, and they jerk up the speed of the thing, and you're holding on for dear life. So they get a good fix on what your heart's doing, because that's what they thought it might be. But that didn't show anything. And then afterwards, I said, well, I got home, and I said, well, what are you going to do? And I thought to myself, and I said, self, when the universe sends you a hint, you better pick up on it. And by that time, I had been a confirmed two-pack-a-day smoker, at least two packs a day. I was a 45 then, since my early 20s, I guess, was when I smoked in earnest. And even now, 20 years later, occasionally I will just hanker for a cigarette. It's weird. I don't know what it is.
No, that evil shit rewires your brain.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah, because there are receptors in your brain that are designed for the nicotine, not molecule, because it goes through the brain-blood barrier through the bloodstream, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And there's little nicotine molecules or whatever, and they fit perfectly. It's like a key in a door. God.
And Ron and Raleigh tells us, I quit January 1st. It will be 45 years since I did it.
Oh, wow. Good for you. Good for you. I and hopefully, if anybody's contemplating not smoking anymore, if a confirmed hardcore addicted smoker such as I can quit, it's a possibility for anyone. That's all I say. All I'll say. I don't like to preach at people. And now I can't be around it. If I'm like walking down the street and there's people on the corner smoking, it's like gags me. And, you know, I think, could I possibly have stunk that much back when I was a hardcore smoker? Because it gets in your clothes and your hair and your breath and God. Oh, well, people are eating. I don't want to discuss them. I got two quick things, and then I had no intention of going this long.
No, this is entirely my fault.
Well, that's all right. You had mentioned the other day that with the new road rig hooked up, which, by the way, sounds great, that you apparently don't have enough inputs because your Skype and your audio player have to share the same pot. Is that pretty much the state of things?
Well, yeah, if you go and look at the Rode, if you go to Rode, RODE.com, mm-hmm. Look for the Rodecaster, and what you'll see is, and it is a genius unit.
I remember when you were contemplating getting it, I looked at the schematic.
I'm in love with it. There's four mic inputs, then there's a USB input, and then there's an input for a phone with a cell phone that you connect with a cord.
Yeah.
You know, Apple got rid of it. Well, I guess you could use an iPhone with the dongle. And then there's Bluetooth. So the only way I could make this work was to have Skype come in on the computer interface, the USB interface.
Yeah.
And then use Bluetooth for the stress line. The problem, though, is twofold. One, and this is primary, and Brother Deacon Asa was trying to help me sort this out, and we haven't yet. But I have tried with great effort in the Skype interface that I have for Windows 10 to make the ringtone go away. because Todd tried to ring in a little bit ago while you and I were talking, and all I could do was be rude and click ignore, which I did several times to you during the Green News Report.
Yeah, and I apologize for that. I had forgotten that you said don't call during this for the reason that we're describing.
And you know, so this part of it's on Skype. This has nothing to do with the Roadcaster. But you go to settings, and you go to audio and video, and nothing there. So you go down to notifications. Okay. Well, let's try calling. No. Nothing there. All right. Let's try advanced. So then you go down to notifications. Well, everything in notifications is turned off. And yet the goddamn thing keeps ringing.
Yeah.
So that's a software problem on the Skype end. The other problem is, and again, when I say these are problems, it's not like the thing doesn't work right. It works fantastically well.
The audio is night and day compared to what it was.
I'm still getting emails. And for a change,
a lot more stable.
For a change, it's not people going, you know, you're too, because if I was clipping, I would get emails from people saying you're clipping. And if I adjusted that, I'd get emails from people saying, I can't hear you. It was fucked. That's all gone now.
I may have a workaround.
Well, wait. You don't know what the workaround is till you know what the problem is.
Oh, okay. Keep going.
There aren't enough audio outs on this. Because, for instance, when I sub for Malloy, I have to send the audio off the board into an incredibly expensive gizmo that then sends the signal in real time to Progressive Voices.
Yeah.
And, you know, the internet has latency. But somehow or another, this miraculously makes the latency disappear. Well, on the old board, I did that through a pair of subgroups. And all I had to do was run them up, and away we went. And this thing has, for instance, it's got four headphone outs. And so those would be, and those are stereo quarter-inch jacks.
Yeah.
Well, I tried running that into the gizmo bupkis. I thought, well, you know, that would make sense if I could take two of those stereo channels and run the, because it should work, but it doesn't. The only other alternative is to take the monitor out jack and try it that way. If I want to take some of the other part of it is, if I want to take some of the load off of the main production computer, the Fab machine, then I'd send audio over to the computer that always did the streaming before, and run the broadcast interface through that. Jesus, the audience is almost entirely gone now, and us with $110 bucks to raise, we're so far off in the fucking broadcast weeds.
Well, I was going to ask you?
Yeah, go ahead.
Does the Rode rig have inputs that either inputs or outputs for RCA left and right, like red and white?
No. No, those days are gone. It's got four quarter inch stereo outs for the headphones, and it's got stereo out for the monitor. Mm-hmm. And that's it. And then of course the USB is full duplex.
One of the outputs for one of those pots on your board, there ought to be a way to connect that to like a mini splitter. I've got a thing here, but it only takes RCA white, red, and yellow. And I can split four different sources and run it through.
Yeah, this is I mean, okay. in a traditional mix desk, and there are a bunch of audio folks out there who are listening going, huh. In a, you've got, for instance, auxiliary sends.
Yeah.
There are no sends on this board.
Okay.
But the trade-out, I mean, again, I'm not complaining, because the trade-out for the audio quality and the transportability, I mean, I've got this thing in line for the studio now, and the only time we're going to run into trouble is if I have to go on the road and Agnes, meanwhile, is running Dr. Bill here. Then we'll have to have another one of these. But it, no, over and you know, this is, it was interesting to see going up and down Radio Row at Netroots Nation. I counted no less than 4 broadcasters using this. If I were to show up in Denver next year, I'll bet it'll be like 10.
Yeah.
This thing is selling like hotcakes.
Well, it seems to be reliable in terms of ease of use and quality. So, I mean, yeah, people are going to use it because if it works, you know, why buy something that might be cheaper or whatever that does most of what you want when you can get it to do all that you want? And it's reliable enough to have a reputation in the industry. That's what I'm thinking.
And so I would imagine maybe Generation 2 or Generation 3, because I'm when you think about the way that especially internet-based broadcasting works, I can't be the only one who needs more outputs.
Well, usually manufacturers welcome real user feedback, and they incorporate a lot of those suggestions and complaints if they're doing it right.
And look, this is not to say this is not to say there's not a workaround. I'm thinking it, but I've got to dig into Bob's Home for Wayward Hardware and Bob's Home for Wayward Wires and come up with the right wiring combination. Theoretically, I could take the monitor outs on this, run them into one of these little PreSonus 2-channel USB affairs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then run it out and then take the audio out of that into the gizmo. That might work. Because
I'm sure there's a workaround. I just wasn't sure what
all I need is a class 1 radio license holder with a pocket protector, hair that hasn't been washed for, you know, since the Obama administration, and glasses that are 3 feet thick. And you just look at this and go, oh, fuck, I can fix it. Get me my soldering iron, Bob.
Yeah.
And well, it'll be problem solved. Because one of the things, like with going into the gizmo, the inputs on the gizmo are XLR. The outputs on this thing are quarter inch TRS.
Okay, what is XLR?
Microphone cord.
Okay, with the little
button. Yeah, balanced. Balanced into imbalanced or unbalanced, or unbalanced into balanced, and weird shit just happens with the electrons and molecules and shit.
Okay.
And you'll be glad to know, Lady B was writing an email.
Oh, good.
Subject line, squee, you know me. Raise his hand. Voice track queen here. Fucking sucked, but at least I got home in time to hear myself. Got in during the 90s when radio was starting to die. No time checks, damn it. Be pleasant and upbeat. Up next, I can't even approximate Lady B's lovely voice, but up next, some Celine Dion and Michael Bolton. You'll also have the chance to win tickets for this weekend's Better Homes and Gardens Home Expo at the Broadmoor World Arena. Plus, you could be entered into the drawing to win lunch with Lee Richards and Michael St. James of the Money Morning Crew. They'll be giving out a $25 gift card to one lucky lunchgoer. It's good times and great music, only on Colorado's Peak 95.1.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, we need to find a radio station with a good signal and...
Then find a limousine liberal with some common fucking sense who's willing to buy it.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea how rare those are?
Well, and not long ago, talking about working out tech issues, I was hooking up my VCR because I've got, you think I've got a lot of air check cassettes. I've got a shit ton of VHS cassettes, okay? And on one of them is Left of the Dial, a documentary about Air America Radio. God, that was such a grand idea, but the people who were behind it in terms of financing
were fuckwits.
Well, they
arguably grifters and con artists.
Well,
what they did to Anita and Sheldon Drobny shouldn't happen to a dog.
Oh, I know. I'm telling you, Bob, if some, and you know there've got to be people with deep enough pockets that we could, you know, when was Air America? Was it like 2001 till about 2006?
I don't think it was even 2001.
No, it was a little later, I guess. 2004.
We went, I think I went on the air, with the horn as a thing on broadcast air in February 2004, and we were only a couple of months behind Air America at that point.
Okay, so
and
I swore
that we would outlast them, and we did. And Agnes can tell you more as much about this as I can. I've said it before. At one point in time, on nothing, we were producing, I think, 2 hours a day short of as much live original content programming as Air America was. And we did it for a few years, a couple of years at least.
Well, what I'm getting at is that Air America as a notion, as an idea, was stellar. It was even executed pretty well when you consider the lineup. You had Mark Maron and the other guy whose name, the black dude whose name I can't remember, in the morning. And you had Al and his partner in middays. I mix up the times because I'm out west. You had Franken and the woman from a Minnesota public station.
And then Randy and Malloy.
That's a fucking...
It was a murderer's row, but here's the problem.
Yeah.
It was doomed from the start for a couple of reasons. One, they were spending money they didn't have, and not to sound bitter or anything, but the financial demands of Al Franken were enough to kill it. Because he demanded an absolute shit ton of money. Then they were leasing time on radio stations instead of trying to buy radio stations.
Yeah, see, that's...
And when you lease tower time, you're losing.
Yeah.
Then, third, they tried to centralize in New York City. It's the worst place in the world to try to centralize simply because it's one of the most expensive places in the world. And they went from one building to another... And at one point in time, we're hemorrhaging $80,000 a day.
And their flagship station, I don't know what they were running watts-wise, but it was way up at 1,600.
And it wouldn't go around the block.
Yeah, I mean, their local station in New York. That's what I mean by flagship. But our Air America affiliate here in San Diego was great. I mean...
Yeah, the local affiliates that were the time was, and then of course outside forces moved in, and there was that infamous memo saying, "Do not allow any of our affiliates to purchase airtime or to purchase advertising on Air America," because the corporations were of course run by right wing corporations.
Yeah. Well, this one. But
I've sat down and explained patiently how you do this as a winning strategy, and all you get is doe in the headlights look, and then you find out that their annual budget for donuts and nail files and cardboard funeral home fans is twice as much as they'd spend buying radio stations, and you realize that you're dealing with people who just don't have a fucking clue.
Well, and the other thing, Bob, is I said find somebody on our side with deep pockets. It seems to be a relationship, a relation, a correlation between the deepness of the pockets and the cash therein and a centrist mindset, maybe even centrist right. Am I onto something there? I mean, it seems the people who have the deepest pockets on our side are not willing to
tell it like they, it is. It's because they don't understand the medium, Scott. They simply do not understand it. There's a phenomenon out there. This would be a great time for me to get Guy James on the line because, boy, can he do chapter and verse on this. The people on our side who have the scratch to do what needs to be done in terms of changing the media landscape would rather spend $100,000 getting a photograph of themselves standing next to Barack Obama. It's a phenomenon known as star fucking. Than they would actually do something substantive with the money and change people's minds.
Or the
Look, as an example, everybody in Alabama, everybody in South Carolina is not a white-wing Fox viewer.
Right.
There are progressives and good liberals and good Democrats in both states. But in neither one of them is there a media outlet for them to rally around or that will give them the platform to express themselves. And so consequently, radio in both places is a vast right-wing desert.
Well, Newton Minow talked about it regarding TV in the early 60s, a vast wasteland.
Yeah.
You know?
And so... It's actually, in terms of bang for buck, you and I both know, because we've worked small market radio, owning a small market license is a license to print money.
Oh, yeah.
The only person who could fail running a small market radio station and have it not make money is maybe Donald Trump.
Well,
and oddly, it's one of the few places where he never fucked up because he never tried it. But You've got an audience, and if you're delivering local content, you've got a reason to sell ads. And if you've got a halfway competent sales staff, they could sell sand to Saudis because it's sales. I mean, we talk about Herb Tarlick, but it's a real skill set.
Oh yeah.
And the eternal, argument between the talent and the sales staff is the eternal argument that Mark Twain used to talk about between the heart and the brain. And so if you had one of these limousine liberals who actually developed some goddamn brains and understood the value and power of this medium, you'd start buying little pissant radio stations in Alabama, South Carolina, Tennessee, Mississippi, dirt cheap, all of them. And then you put together a lineup of talkers and you flood the airwaves with liberal, progressive conversation.
And you
make sure you've got a couple of locals on in, say, your morning drive and your afternoon drive, and you let the locals call in, even if they're screaming, even if they're maggots, unlike this program, you let them on the air, and then if the people you've got doing the local stuff are any good at all, you explain to them how and why they are so disastrously wrong.
And if wrongness impacts their very own lives.
Right, and if the person is good at it, along the way you abuse them a little bit because they like that. They like that. Remember, more porn is downloaded. More spank me, I've been naughty porn is downloaded in Alabama and Utah than probably in the entire states of California and New York combined.
Oh, of course. Of course. I mean, but what I was getting at with the money bags person on our side, how much money has Steyer poured into trying to impeach Trump, and now he's running for president?
Oh, I'm sorry. That just makes me want to tear off my clothes and eat dirt and run rabbits.
Isn't it like 40-some million for the impeachment thing alone?
Well, yeah, and look where he's spending it. Again, I come back to one of the fundamental arguments I make about campaign finance and campaign advertising. It offends the fuck out of me that political candidates on our side, and I understand why, because it's the only way, but, you know, they're reaching out to people who don't have it and saying, and if you give them $3 once, you will never not hear from them again.
Yeah.
And you'll get a give me $3 email the next day and the next day, and sometimes you get three and four a day. And, oh, Bob, I wanted to make sure you didn't miss this from whoever.
Or it's a doom and gloom email saying that if we don't hear from you, it's almost as bad as fucking preachers.
Right. And see, this is where the curtain gets pulled back on what a scam it is that is driven, because all election money, all campaign advertising money is corporate welfare for the for-profit media. All right, let's start with that as a principle. Now, so you got all these Democratic candidates who are begging $3 at a time so that they can meet some threshold to stay in the fucking debates, so that they can buy advertising on these for-profit networks that are owned by people who hate their policies, hate their positions, hate their constituencies, and hate the candidate's own goddamn guts.
Yeah.
And we give them the money and say, hit me again, I can put a little stank on it.
I get, and I know we're a little over time, but let me close with this. The main thing that just boggles my mind, Bob. Now, Air America was like 2004 until 2007 or 8, thereabouts, I think. Okay? And then it went away. It didn't succeed. And, oh, the righties could not decry and honk and make fun of, well, I guess there ain't no market for liberal talk radio. Well, here's the deal, Bob. We gave up that territory. We're not even fighting on that landscape
right
anymore for those ears and those votes. And
hearts
those
and minds, hearts and minds. Minds.
You know? And it's like, why yield the territory when you lost one battle? And the technology now compared to 2004 through 2007 or 8, it is so, the technology is so much more streamlined even now.
Oh, but see, even before they blamed Air America, they blamed who was the former Texas Ag Commissioner?
With the hat.
Yeah, great guy, and did great radio.
The mustache.
Yeah. But they blamed him. So yeah, when one fails, it'll never work. On the other hand, they take, you know, the Ben Shapiro, the right wing doesn't do that. They just keep putting people behind the microphone and saying, let's see which one, you know, let's see which one makes us rich. And well, if he's not making us rich, is he advancing our position?
They're underwritten, Bob.
Right.
To a fucking, there was a thing in, I think, the New York Times.
Limbaugh was underwritten like hell from jump.
The look on the New York Times website and key in the search bar, Scaife, like Melon Scaife.
Yeah.
Did you read that article about that woman?
Yeah.
Oh God. Oh,
I followed all of this for years. By the way, Todd in South Carolina, Stan says you guys bring out the best in each other. So
well, thank you, Todd.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. But the thing is that we're, in a sense, and I'm a little older than Bob, but not by all that much. In a sense, we're elders who know the game and can see clearly what the situation is. We have practical, workable ideas for expanding our territory and winning some elections, retaking the Senate, holding on to the House, and retaking the White House. With, I know the rights want to say, well, it's a liberal agenda. Bullshit. It's your own people. That
How about if it's a working people's agenda? Remember, Trump was elected on a on an anti-NAFTA platform,
I know,
and he was going to bring the jobs back. And instead, he's burying his own constituency.
Yeah, but that's the key, Bob. I mean, in the problem are the building blocks for the solution, so that the slogan on the hat should be "Make America Work Again." We've always been great in a flawed kind of way.
I don't even like the "make" part. I don't like the compulsory aspect of that. How about help America work again? Because government is supposed to help. Government is not supposed to be a hindrance.
But when I say work, it's the notion of jobs, of course.
Oh, make America, all, yeah, make America function again?
Function, exactly. That's where I was going with it.
MAFA?
And it's like, you know,
that's one vowel away from being a very bad word, Scott.
Mofo.
No, mafia.
Oh, no, no. Okay, well, let's not do it that way then. But what I'm saying is, Bob, I look at the guy who wanted to do impeachment, poured all kinds of shit ton of money down that rat hole, and now he's pouring another shit ton of money, and he's on a
into a vanity into a vanity presidential campaign.
And it's like, what? It's as if we don't want to win. On some level, it's like, how can you people not see the bigger picture?
Right, meanwhile, the Democratic National Committee is out there saying, you've got to win enough money to donate to the corporate-controlled right-wing for-profit media in order to play in the Democratic game. God
Almighty!
Once again, it's Casey Stengel with the 61 Mets or 62 mm-hmm. Mets. Does anybody here know how to play this game?
Yeah. God help us.
You know, every time you and I reference something before 1990, a millennial drops away from the audience.
What? An angel doesn't get its wings? What?
Or yeah, something like that. Yeah. I got to get out of here, Scott. You have a good
All
evening,
right,
my friend.
Well, take care and
oh wait, okay. One last good thing. I had a note from Lady B.
Okay.
And you deserve to be on the air for this. Subject line, salespeople. Sales.
Oh, yeah.
Sales. We need more ad time, jocks. It's about the music, man. Sales. Good. Cut your breaks down to 30 seconds. We've only got 25 minutes to sell ads as it is. There's free weed in the break room. Don't smoke it all during your shift. Dude, free weed? Yeah.
Jeez. Well, anyway, we're going to work this out one way or another, because we're always in a process. That's what it is. And we're, you know, just keep on keeping on and keep your head on straight and don't deliberately fuck up and don't deliberately play into the hands of the imbeciles, and you'll do okay. I mean, not just you, but all of us.
All we can do is try.
That's right. All we've got in common is our misery.
Now, get off the phone, Scott, and go look for that air check.
Okay. And come
God
up,
damn,
come
man,
up.
That's because that you announced the existence of a holy grail.
Coming up next on the Great Country Classic Music Sweep, Willie Nelson and "I Kissed Her Lips Goodbye and Left Her Behind for You."
So, ba-dum-bum. You know, today right. I can't quit you. So okay. I was in Wally World today, and I saw a woman walking along, and she was an older lady, and she had long red hair and a braid. And I had to stop myself because I realized it would have been really insulting. I didn't mean it that way, but I just kind of did one of those W.C. Field, not double, but triple takes, you know, the
Yeah.
And I almost looked at her and said, "Ma'am, did you know you're a dead ringer for Willie Nelson?" Because she was. I would have gotten punched or maybe kicked in the balls. So I didn't do that. I'm proud of myself.
Well, that reminds me of something, a story that Groucho used to tell. At MGM, he was in the elevator, and a woman backed on in front of him, and the door shut, and she was wearing a big wide-brim hat. And he would take his hand and push up the back of it so it came down over her face a little bit. And the woman turned around, and it was Greta Garbo. And Groucho said, "Oh, I'm terribly sorry. I thought you were a fella I knew from Kansas City." I don't know what that means, but it always struck me as funny, and I'm going away now.
Probably the best for all involved. Later, indeed. Scott.
All right, Bob. See ya.
Bye now. Well, that was delightful. Time to get out of here. It's 14 minutes past time to get out of here. No time checks! I want to thank Darlene and Steve for the challenge, and I want to thank everybody who responded to it. That took considerable pressure off Friday on the front porch. We got $110 left to go in fundraising for the evening, so that means tomorrow it'll be $310. Hopefully we can make it. In the meantime, thank you to all of you who throughout the month, either by being a subscriber or on an ad hoc basis, keep this program going. Thank you so very, very much. See, you're doing what those limousine liberals won't, and you're demonstrating the good sense that they don't have. Thank you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Steve and to Sparky in the chat room earlier. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Together, perhaps at some point, we'll actually solve the problem that goddamn Skype ring. Yes, indeed, you did, anonymous person. Thank you. And I helped. Yes, you did. Thank you. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you, John Fox in Australia, with a brand new git fiddle to play. It's a beauty. I've told him we need an audio recording, so that, yeah, just to share. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.